to 90 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Maron, and today's Morning Sedition, taking Nightline off the air to keep Americans from seeing the roll call of our war dead. Plus, we'll peek into the Presidential Day Planner. That and more on Morning Sedition, up on Air America Radio.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney yesterday appeared before the 9/11 panel inside the Oval Office. President, after the get-together, said the three-hour meeting was cordial. He had been pressed by members on his response to a controversial memo that raised the threat of plane hijackings and attacks with explosives. Bush said that he answered every question that was asked. While the Bush administration continues to ask what could have been done to prevent the deadly September 11th attacks in 2001, there appears to be more evidence that many felt the administration was not paying attention to the issue of terrorism before the attacks. Among them was L. Paul Bremer, who is now the top U.S. administrator in Iraq. Bremer, in a speech in late February of 2001, said the administration was paying no attention to terrorism. Bremer said what they will do is stagger along until there's a major incident and then suddenly say, "Oh my God, should not we be organized to deal with this?" Bremer made that point in a speech to the McCormick Tribune Foundation conference on terrorism. West Virginia veteran Senator Robert Byrd continues to pound the administration for its engagement in Iraq. Yesterday, Byrd appeared on the Senate floor and declared there's no quick fix to the crisis of the country.
The invasion of Iraq has stoked the fires of terrorism against the United States and our allies. Najaf is smoldering. Fallujah is burning, and there is no exit in sight.
Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia. Broadcast company sometimes called the Next Fox has ordered its seven ABC stations not to broadcast tonight's Nightline program. Tonight's edition will air the names and photographs of the more than 500 U.S. troops killed in the Iraq War. In a statement online, the Sinclair Group said Nightline appears to be motivated by a political agenda designed to undermine the efforts of the United States in Iraq and should not be disguised as news.
Sarah, We'll have to move the piano. Mom's just not going to be able to get around in that room.
I know, in the kitchen. What do we do with the stove and knives and all that stuff that could be dangerous?
Yeah, what about the locks on the doors, too, so she can't wander out? I sure wish there was some place to call to find out what else we should do.
Me too.
If you're caring for a loved one who's suffering from Alzheimer's disease, there is something you can do to get more information. The National Institute on Aging has prepared a kit, especially for caregivers of Alzheimer's patients. You can get the free caregiver's kit just by calling 1-800-438-4380. It'll show you how to make your house safer for someone with Alzheimer's disease. Just call 1-800-438-4380.
There are so many questions. How will we ever make her feel at home?
Don't forget us, David. We'll be affected, too.
Call 1-800-438-4380 for your free caregiver's kit. This is a service of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
U.S. military is said to be considering disciplinary action against the Army general charged with the responsibility of overseeing the prison in the western Baghdad area where American troops were accused of abusing Iraqi prisoners. Reports say Brigadier General Janice Karpinski could be relieved of her command, blocked from promotion, or receive a letter of reprimand following an investigation into the abuse. CBS News program 60 Minutes 2 aired photographs of the victims of abuse earlier this week. African nation of Sudan has agreed to allow American aid experts to inspect humanitarian needs in a region of western Darfur. A conflict in that area has displaced some 800,000 people. Under the plan, Sudan would grant visas to all 28 members of an assistance team to evaluate the situation in Darfur. Sudanese government-backed militias have been fighting the rebel forces in the area for more than a year now. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Today at 5 on Channel 7 Eyewitness News. Prom night means risky business, so Eyewitness News gives parents new ideas for getting your teen home safe. Plus at 5.
Really juicy hamburgers.
Eyewitness News shows you where to find the best burger in town.
Are you hungry yet?
Plus at 6, nightmare at your motor vehicle office. Eyewitness News exposes a problem so bad, people are lining up before dawn just to get in. It all starts with Diana Williams and Sade Veteranois. Today at 5 on Eyewitness News, only on EBC 7.
An all-new Oprah.
heart-stopping life and death moments caught on tape. Snakes.
I hate going to him!
Twisters.
I'm at him!
Sharks.
You say you felt your own legs pop. I went down. My legs are gone.
They face death and live to talk about it. Then two climbers trapped. Dangling at 20,000 feet, his friend cuts the rope. What happened next? Unimaginable. That's so far.
Today at 4, only on ABC 7, followed by Eyewitness News at 5. Planet Check.
Surf's up for ocean warriors.
Matt McLean from Surf Rider explains.
Surf Rider Foundation is a nonprofit grassroots environmental organization that focuses on protecting and preserving our world's oceans, waves, and beaches.
This year marks the 20th anniversary for Surf Rider. It started back in 1984 by a handful of visionary surfers in Malibu, California, who were concerned about some threats to their surf spot.
They kind of banded together and formed this kind of loose collective of that time surfers, and then it just kind of continued on.
In 1991, Surf Rider incorporated their first chapter.
So we could better serve communities because the level of issues and threats out there to our coastlines was so numerous.
Ride the wave and join them at surfrider.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check, your daily one-minute terrestrial examination. Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool. Planet Check.
Laptop lunches take a bite out of waste.
The whole thought behind our product is to get people to start packing waste-free lunches, and the trend right now is prepackaged food.
That's Tammy Pelstring, CEO of Obentech Incorporated.
On average, a child who takes a disposable lunch to school generates 67 pounds of waste. We're talking millions of pounds of waste are being generated.
Laptop lunches are inspired by the design of the Japanese bento box.
So our idea with our product is to try to get parents packing lunches again. In order to do that, we wanted to provide them with the tools to do that more conveniently and do it in a way that has style so the kids think it's fun. On the back door, preventing all that trash and plastic bags and foil and all of that from going to the landfills. Laptop lunches, tools to eat smart.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to tadmail.com, where environmentally conscious Americans get their internet access for free. Tadmail.com, helping people and the planet.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron here along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, we'll talk to a former U.S. diplomat who quit to protest the war in Iraq. Plus, we'll peek into the President's Day planner and into my dream diary, of course. That's all coming up, but right now I'm joined by Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. Good Friday morning to you.
Good Friday morning to you.
There are no bad Fridays.
I know. It's great, isn't it? It's been so long since I had a day-to-day job that I actually, like, Friday, it's like, it's unbelievable. I'm like, yes, I can sleep. Good morning to everybody. I don't know. You know, I don't know what I'm going to talk about right now. What am I going to talk about right now? I didn't have any weird dreams except for the one I wrote down. And we'll take that later. I didn't wake up with any weird song in my head.
I got a question.
Yeah.
When you have these dreams, do you have to write them down as soon as you wake up? Or do you really remember them for a long period of time?
I can't remember my dreams for very long. Can you?
No.
It's weird because, like, when you wake up and you remember, you're like, okay, I'm just going to make a note to myself in my head. Remember this because this is really weird. And even when you commit to it like that, you still can't forget. Yeah. You know, maybe what I want to talk about is, like, you know, occasionally we get the emails here at Morning Sedition. That's sedition at airamericaradio.com. And we really appreciate all of your emails, and we're glad that you have that kind of free time to go ahead and email us wherever you're working. And, you know, it's weird. I'm the kind of person that if, like, there's 20 great emails, if there's one guy out there who's going, hey, man, you suck, I don't like what you do, you're the worst, and I'm gonna put your picture up in my bathroom and just throw hate at you every morning that I wake up. If I get one of those emails, which is pretty elaborate for me to even think about that, for me to project that amount of hatred towards me onto somebody else to put it back at me, implies something about me, but we're not going into that.
Maybe you should keep an email diary in addition to your dream diary.
All I'm saying is that I'm the type of cat who, like, you know, I will look right past the 15 good ones to the one bad one and say, what's that guy talking about? Does he have a point? I'm incapable of, like, you know, really sort of taking in any compliments. Like, I'm the kind of person that if somebody says to me, I used to be really bad. Someone could just walk up to me and go, hey, how's it going? I'm like, why, is there a problem? You know, like, literally. Like, you know, good morning. What are you saying exactly? Are you saying that I'm making your morning bad somehow? Like, I cannot interpret, you know, anything that's complimentary is being honest or trustworthy.
So if somebody says, have a nice day to you, you kind of freak out.
Yeah, if somebody, especially if they walk by and they're smiling and they say, have a nice day, I'm like, what is that guy up to? What could that have possibly meant? Mm. Am I the only one? You don't have this.
Sometimes in moments of non-lucidity.
And you too?
I guess there is too much thing. There is something that is too much coffee. I think maybe you've gone over the edge of that coffee thing and getting to that kind of nervous, semi-paranoid.
No.
Cheryl, have it in for me.
I'm always semi-paranoid. All I'm trying to do is, like, do you ever get, like, when you hear a compliment, what does it do for you? Like, if I said, hey, great job, would you just go, I guess. Yes, I do that.
I assume that any compliment anybody ever gives me is either, you know, insincere or a mistake.
All right, so we're on the same page.
What, you mean it was meant for a different Sue Ellicott?
No, it just, or else I'll blush. I'll just look embarrassed.
Like you are now.
And I'll look down.
It's because I think that we're hard on ourselves because we have high expectations out of ourselves. But I just know, and I guess most people are like this.
No, for me it's about being British and that we're all supposed to be unworthy. We're supposed to be humble and unworthy, and we know we're all useless. That's how we were all kept in our place for so many centuries.
Is that where that comes from, that Victorian-style repression?
I think it comes from school in England, being, you know, beaten over the knuckles with rulers and whacked on the back when you couldn't do your times tables and made to stand on a chair if you didn't know 7 times 8 and you couldn't get down again until the teacher next called on you and you got the sum right.
Wow.
It's years of humiliation.
And I just do that to myself.
And you just do it to me. Said, it's amazing.
I get the same effect just from waking up. It's unbelievable.
Well, what can I say? Maybe it's just human nature.
This is unusual to me. I went to military school, so we went through all of that humiliation in just about 3 years' time.
I'm just in recovery, but in recovery from a British upbringing.
Do they have that? Is there a program?
It's not a 12-step. It's like 1,012.
Wow.
Look out.
Ahead,
yesterday, man. It took 3 hours and 10 minutes for the 9/11 Commission to meet with President Bush, Vice President Dick Cheney, and White House Counsel Alberto Gonzalez. When it was all over, little was said about the substance of the testimony. In fact, Bush was able to distill 3 hours of testimony into 21 semi-coherent seconds. Here he is at the Rose Garden just after his testimony.
We discussed a lot of things, Terry, a lot of subjects. It was a very cordial conversation. I was impressed by the questions, and I think it helped them understand how I think and how I run the White House and how we deal with threats.
Do you think those really are birds in the background tweeting, or it's some kind of code that Cheney is feeding to him?
I'm having the Bush problem.
It's a boombox.
I'm having the sort of, you know, the pity is overbearing my hatred of the guy.
It is kind of sad.
Did you hear the weird vulnerability in his voice? Like, you know, I studied really hard for days, and I'm pretty sure it came up okay, but I'm not really sure. I got to wash it off my hand now. I wrote everything down in my palm. I hope they didn't notice.
You may remember that the White House did all it could to scuttle the 9/11 panel before it even got started. Bush didn't even want to allocate the $11 million needed to do its work. But you wouldn't know that by what he said Thursday about the private meeting.
I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I took the time. It's an important commission, and it's important that they ask the questions they ask so that they can help make recommendations necessary to better protect our homeland. I enjoyed it.
Wow, sure.
Now there's a truck coming to run him over. What's going on?
Was that a truck backing up? Where'd they do
that?
Sounded
like a huge sanitation truck.
Yeah. Did they have that? They just come right up to the White House? They start banging cans around? Do Laura and George get up in the middle of the night going, not again?
Yeah, right?
Oh, my God. And between that and the car alarms.
in the Rose Garden, too. I mean, you wouldn't think that you'd be able to hear a truck backing up in the Rose Garden of the White House.
Is this part of some sort of broader conspiracy to distract us, to make us think that the president's just an average dude who deals with average problems?
I think they're just testing out new armored vehicles before they go to Iraq.
They're going to send sanitation trucks over there to clean up. We've got a solution. No more armed forces. Let's just clean up the garbage here.
Wow.
Well, he was sounding very much like, I nailed it, guys. I aced it.
I thought he sounded really kind of fragile. You know, I thought he sounded really kind of skittish and weird. And, like, I think the spin they're trying to do is, like, yeah, I'm just trying to help these guys, make it okay for other guys to come into this office and treat this, as opposed to some sort of real criticism of him. And I don't think it's sticking. That's the feeling I got from his tone of voice, is that he realized that he's just BSing a little bit and that he felt very sort of put on the spot, and he probably feels a little raw because he feels a little screwed.
Well, everybody connected with yesterday's meeting was, to some degree or another, I think, BSing. Lee Hamilton and Bob Cherry, who's the president of New School University, both left early, about an hour early.
What does that say?
Lee Hamilton had a long-standing engagement to go and meet, who was it, the Canadian Prime Minister. He had to go and see somebody, and apparently the commission knew that, and the president and Cheney knew that, and that's why they had changed it from 10 until 9:30 or something. But the Bob Kerry thing, there's supposed to be a statement coming out from his staff today explaining why he left early.
Yeah. So this dude had a meet with the Canadian, the president of the United States.
I read somewhere this morning in the blur of between 3 and 3:30 a.m. who he had to meet, but it was more important
than the president.
Yeah, it was all that they did that, because clearly it does look bad. But especially when everybody else seems to be bending over backwards to make their reactions look absolutely nonpartisan. And in the last few weeks, many of them have been criticized, and Bob Kerry especially, for going so hard at Condoleezza Rice during her testimony. But I was really surprised reading this morning how glowing the members of the commission were about the president's performance.
Yeah.
Tim Romer, the Democrat, said that he admired the president's graciousness during the questioning. And Jim Thompson, we might expect this from him, I suppose, but he's a Republican, thought that he did really well and said, the president is a bit of a tease.
Whatever that
means. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Like he's a joker? Kind of eyeballing him a little bit, and he was shooting me eyes, but he didn't really mean it.
He was talking about that there was no tension in the meetings. They had it at the Oval Office, and it wasn't at a room where there's a normal table and chair set up. The members of the commission were all sitting around on couches and
hanging out,
easy chairs.
Just hanging out, having some salsa and chips.
Well, it's kind of a control thing, because Bush and Cheney were sitting on more formal seats in front of the fireplace in the Oval Office, opposite one another. And then the commission was sort of sitting around. I think that is a situation that Bush feels very comfortable in, when he is slightly higher up in a more rigid chair, looking as though he's the boss. That's all about power and control.
But I also, the temperature a little high in the room.
Yeah, maybe so people
warm,
get drowsy.
Yeah, people get drowsy.
I think that the control thing is probably. On some level, they all, in their hearts, aspire to be able to sit in that office.
By the way, Kerry left early. Bob Kerry left early to have a meeting with Senator Pete Domenico.
He was like, screw this. I've heard this before. It's the same old.
Enough is enough.
Still ahead, our exclusive peek inside the President's Day Planner, right here on Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. None of our hosts were ever implicated in the Iran-Contra scandal.
The Iraqis are plenty mad.
Laura Flanders.
Let's transition and let's talk about another historical parallel to the situation we find ourselves in today. One of the things left for us to discuss here today is the parallels that many people are drawing to the situation in Vietnam. Is it a legitimate parallel? Does it work? Does it make sense?
Laura Flanders, Saturday night from 7 to 10 on Air America Radio.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Yeah, right.
Now we'll just wait for that refuse truck to come back in again. Reversing.
Mark Maron here with Sue Alcott and Mark Riley, of course. Good morning. It is now 22 past the hour. It's time for our exclusive look, as it is every day, into the President Bush's day planner for Friday, April 30th. 7 a.m., wake up, perform victorious underwear dance over yesterday's 9/11 commission, slam dunk, taunt the mirror. 9 a.m., solicit praise from staff about how leadery I looked yesterday. 10:30 a.m., announce to press that all those times I didn't answer their questions, those still count as press conferences. 11:25 a.m., meet with Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin, say, Vancouver's nice, can we have it? 2:30 p.m., meet with President of Guatemala, impress him with your knowledge of Latin American culture by telling your famous Tijuana donkey story.
No. He probably has one.
I'm sure. 4 p.m., take Chopper 1 to Air Force 1 and back, because you can. 5 p.m., prep for future photo ops. Practice helpless down-home stutter. 9 p.m., bedtime. Tijuana. Donkey. That's it. The President's Day Planner for today. You know, good news from the from my bootleg time-traveling portal guy, my acid head friend who can, you know, manufacture anything to do with dats, and he can get anything. Well, he's spent a year producing this tremendous DVD that just is being released tomorrow in collusion with the anniversary of our victory in Iraq. Can we play the promo, Chris?
Now the incredible true story of one president's courageously short-sighted victory lap aboard the USS Lincoln becomes the DVD event of the year. Faced with the challenge of Iraqi aggression, one willing soldier bravely took out the trash. When he landed on that aircraft carrier, it was time to celebrate, Texas style.
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Flight suit on, walking tall, the banner behind him set it off. George W. Bush, mission accomplished. This special one-year anniversary edition includes deleted scenes.
Maverick, you've broken every rule in the book. What do you have to say for yourself?
No, I hope I don't want to sound like I made no mistakes. I'm confident I have. I just haven't... You put me under the spot here, and maybe I'm not as quick on my feet as I should be in coming up with one.
Also included, worrisome bloopers.
Uh-oh, I think we hit another mosque.
And a director's commentary by Carl Rove.
And here's where I said, and this time, numbnuts, don't just say evildoers, feel it.
Also on the disc, Colin Powell's chilling presentation to the United Nations.
You vote no, and I'll bust this file, right here and now.
So if you love unbridled aggression, or just profound irony, you must own George W. Bush, Mission Accomplished, now on DVD.
Now, to really test the pulse of our listeners, let's see how many people actually call to order the DVD. That's going to be interesting.
This is like that movie The Day After, with the kind of destruction of the United States that we're really living the year after.
Yeah. It's unbelievable that I think they really initially, when he did that whole appearance on the, you know, on the boat,
that he really thought they were putting a lot of money into something that would turn out to be a great campaign ad,
mm-hmm.
and it just completely backfired. Because apparently, I mean, and I heard this, but we just got sort of reconfirmation on that. The White House was definitely responsible for the mission accomplished sign.
Yes.
And they said that they weren't initially. And they turned the boat around because it was too close to shore so they could shoot it and see open seas to make it, you know, seem
so
like
so they wouldn't really see the San Diego skyline in the background.
And here's some other interesting facts. These are U.S. soldiers killed before May 1st, 2003, 109. U.S. soldiers killed after May 1st, 2003, 413. U.S. soldiers wounded before May 1st, 2003 was 541. U.S. soldiers wounded after May 1st, 3,323. So he really couldn't have been more wrong. And the arrogance of it all is just so, you know, it's mind-blowing. And I think that bit really told it all there.
Do you think there's any chance, sorry, Mark, do you think there's any chance that the Kerry team could use snatches of the news footage of Bush on that aircraft carrier in their campaigns? Or would that be just off-limits?
I think he should.
They've got to be embarrassed about it, the administration, surely. They can't own the footage. Wasn't it covered by all the news networks?
Yeah,
so it must be out there in the public domain.
That would be a great ad.
You don't even have to say anything. I mean, I know because there's so much issue how nasty the campaign ads are. I keep thinking I should leave this job and go and work for the Kerry campaign. I have too many ideas of stuff that they could use.
If they took all the times where he was either stuttering or screwing up or, like, just on TV and just had the voice of, like, mission accomplished? And just say,
it's like those Monty Python things when this big foot comes down and goes and squidges somebody. All you need is, like, you know, show Bush on the aircraft carrier. But just a great big exclamation mark that comes over the top.
Right.
You don't even need it. Could be this fantastic silent ad.
Yeah, you could just have a montage of things. You could have the airline carrier, and then you could just have several sequences of him stuttering, maybe him, you know, reading to the school children on 9/11. You know,
there was an ad that they've used already.
Oh, really?
Including the mission accomplished stuff.
But I'm sure it wasn't
funny.
Hopefully
it's the first of many.
You know, that's what Kerry needs, is to
they need some
pop
funny
up
ones.
The sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He needs a little more sense of humor.
And he needs a little more going for the jugular, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, just like really pushing it. You know what I mean? What's he afraid of? I mean, they're doing it to him.
Well, see, this is what I think. So a lot of people who support Kerry take him to task for is not being that, you know, you got to want it, the fire in the belly kind of thing. And, you know, it may or may not be a legitimate criticism, but certainly Bush has given him a lot of, a lot of stuff to criticize, a lot of stuff to really run ads about. And this May 1st time, certainly in the battleground states, you would expect to see something.
But it's hard if you are not a really mean guy, or if you don't think that way, and you're trying to turn yourself into someone who can play on the national stage and go up against the incumbent, and you need so much money. And I mean, he's being attacked by very negative ads, Kerry, over the last sort of month or so. I mean, Bush's ads are considered far more directly negative on Kerry than Kerry's are on Bush.
Yeah.
He's doing reasonably well, given the attack.
$80 million.
$80 million so far this year. Maybe he needs to get Frank Lautenberg to go out on the stump for him. Lautenberg was...
He was good, man.
He was good.
Chicken hawks! Yeah, chicken hawks!
You can't argue with the man, that's for sure.
He's from which state again?
Jersey, across from our studios.
He's the guy he's the one on the Senate floor this week who used all the maps and stuff and was... Mm-hmm. Well, let's see that soundbite, the Chicken Hawk soundbite, whether it works.
Yeah.
So we've got my dream diary up ahead, and we'll take your calls. We want to know what we didn't talk about this, but we will, about the Sinclair broadcasters, you know, banning the Nightline episode. Call us at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We'll put you on the line right here on Air America.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. There's word that some intelligence analysts now suspect that several Texas oil refineries may be the target of attacks before the November elections. The development stems from information received by the Washington Intelligence Community. Operatives within the community cite the movement of who they describe as Middle Eastern men casing the refineries in recent weeks. In Iraq, the fighting rages on in Fallujah in spite of efforts to bring about a lasting peace. Despite a tentative agreement to have U.S. troops withdraw from the city. Some fighting with insurgents has been reported. African nation of Sudan has agreed to allow American aid experts to inspect humanitarian needs in the region of Western Darfur. Conflict in that area has displaced some 800,000 people. Dow Chemical is adding to the ranks of the unemployed. Huge chemical company said it was chopping some 3,000 jobs globally this year. The announcement came as the company posted a first quarter profit that was six times that of last year's. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. Good morning. It's Friday. Our first caller, by coincidence, just happens to be a former U.S. diplomat. The president says we will do what it takes to get the situation under control in Iraq. Meanwhile, United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan is urging restraint. More and more, it seems as if U.S. foreign policy is at odds with what the rest of the world thinks. What impact does this have on our diplomatic relations with other countries? Does it even matter? Joining us now is a former U.S. diplomat. John Brown spent most of his 22 years with the Foreign Service in Eastern Europe and Russia. He sent his letter of resignation to Colin Powell last year in protest to the war in Iraq. How are you, sir? Good morning.
How are you today, Mark?
I'm very well. Now, there are reports about rifts within the State Department. I mean, from your experience, you know, working as a diplomat in this administration, from your contacts today, is there a lot of contention within the State Department?
Well, I think it's significant that the Undersecretary for Public Affairs of the State Department, you may have seen in the news yesterday, is deciding to leave. She doesn't want to evidently continue working to manage public affairs for the State Department.
Mm-hmm. And Colin Powell, I just heard, is saying that the support for the Iraq war is going to pick back up again soon. What do you think of Colin Powell?
Well, I think he's mistaken. I think there's a profound dissatisfaction in this country with the war. I don't think all the polls reflect it. I don't think Americans understand really why we're there. And I think they realize increasingly that they were misled into a misadventure, if not a catastrophe.
What was it like working with him, for him?
Well, I think he's an honorable man. I don't think he's a deep thinker, and I don't pretend to be a deep thinker myself, but I think he's a manager, but I don't think he's the kind of a person who asks fundamental questions such as, why are we doing this, Mr. President?
Mm-hmm. So he sort of presented himself as somebody that sort of did ask those questions. I thought initially a lot of people thought he was a little resistant to it.
Well, a little resistant, that's not enough. He
right.
should have spoken out much more strongly about this badly thought out adventure.
What was he afraid of? Is he just a careerist?
Oh, I can't judge about his character. I don't know him personally. I think that he's a soldier, you know, and he salutes and yes, sir.
Right. Mm-hmm.
John Brown, I saw a story earlier this week that implied that there were large numbers of people in the State Department, the permanent bureaucracy in the State Department, that can't wait to see George W. Bush go. Given your experience in state, is this something that's normal? Are the middle-level bureaucrats in the State Department partisan on that level?
Well, partisan is not, I would say, the right word. I think it's a sense among persons at the State Department that they're not being taken seriously as professionals who believe in diplomacy. And I think it gets back to what I consider a fundamental problem with this administration, is that it doesn't really believe in negotiations, which is really the heart, as you know, of diplomacy. Rather, it believes in force, and it doesn't believe in bilateral communications, but rather it believes in the imposition of its own will on the world. And as a result of that, this administration has contributed to what I consider an anti-American century, regrettably.
I'm hearing on behalf of the rest of the planet.
Yes.
And that, you know, they think that negotiations or diplomacy is a last-ditch effort, and usually I think they assume that it makes them look like wussies, right?
I would not disagree with that. And, you know, in my own field, which is public diplomacy, which is meant to be a supplement to traditional diplomacy, and according to the State Department, public diplomacy means to engage, influence, and inform foreign audiences. It's terribly difficult to have a public diplomacy if you don't even have an administration that believes in traditional diplomacy.
Well, what is the diplomatic solution to this situation?
Which situation?
To the situation in Iraq.
It's a very complicated question. I wish I could give you an answer.
You can't. You don't have any just button talking
points. I don't
points.
Have a button. I just think we have to start talking with other people, with other countries, with other nations. We have to stop being so, frankly, arrogant. And I think we have to concede that we've made mistakes there, and we haven't done that.
And also reach out to the different factions within Iraq, obviously, because there seem to be so many.
Well, of course, it's a tremendously complicated situation. And, you know, this goes back again to a fundamental problem with this administration, is that even though they're very clever people and very clever in logistics, in political logistics, especially domestically, they're terribly parochial. I mean, they're provincial.
Yeah.
And they have no idea of what happens abroad as a result of what they call their policies.
Actually, John Brown, that's a good point to ask you this question. I saw in the New York Times this morning that only a month before a deadline in Haiti, the United Nations is finding it very hard to sign up peacekeeping troops and French-speaking police officers to take over security from an American-led interim force. And it's sort of a parallel with the situation in Iraq, where they had the June 30th deadline, and they're talking about, you know, handing over security to Iraqi forces in Fallujah. How does this play overseas, and do Americans care that it looks as though, as the world's policemen, they can't follow through things and finish them properly?
Well, I can just say that the damage done to American prestige abroad is immense because of the policies of this administration. We have lost our reputation, I think, for being trying to be reasonable and engage in a dialogue with other countries. It's going to take an enormous amount of work to try to offset all the negative consequences of the policies of this administration abroad. And its mishandling of public diplomacy, as I said, which it in fact ignores. As I said, public diplomacy being, you know, engaging in a dialogue with other countries, with audiences abroad.
Former U.S. diplomat John Brown, thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
My pleasure, Mark.
I appreciate your presence here. Well, that was interesting. The guy actually quit the Bush administration to protest the war.
You know,
take some nads.
Well, yeah, and because he certainly could end up being ostracized and not being able to work if Bush were somehow to win a second term. But, you know, the whole notion that this administration has kind of decided to become the bully boy of the world plays badly outside the country, but I wonder how it plays inside the country. Mark, you know.
But that's what's worrying. It doesn't seem to play that badly.
Well, yeah, because there is a segment of the U.S. population that thinks we should be the bully boys of the world.
Yeah, that's weird. That's the weirdest argument that you can have with people, is that you sit there and for all your sort of ideas of you know, humanitarian, you know, presence in the world, and that there are still some people that will defend empire, you know, under the argument of, like, well, who else is supposed to do it?
Or it's with this administration, it's the sense of it's kind of morally right.
right.
to go in and try and promote democracy in these countries. And it is they do act in a culturally insensitive way, and it's all about that the means justify the ends. It's just that the ends are not quite happening now in Haiti or in Iraq.
Very true. But, you know, a lot of it, I think, has to do with the fact that these folks are willing to take the short-term hits for the problems, whether it be Fallujah, Najaf, or whatever, because they're still looking at this mythological end game where the region will turn democratic. The U.S. will have some hegemony over not just Iraq, over the entire Middle East.
Right. Be democratic or else.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to talk about this Sinclair not airing. The Sinclair Broadcast Group has ordered its ABC-affiliated stations not to carry Friday's Nightline, which will air the names and photos of soldiers who have been killed in combat in Iraq. Sinclair General Counsel Barry Faber tells the site, "We find it to be contrary to the public interest." And the boycott will affect 8 ABC-affiliated Sinclair stations. And we talked on this program about the coffins, you know, and the pictures of the coffins being allowed to get through. And most people seem to support the idea of seeing images of military dead in coffins, you know, draped with the American flag, because it's an important, out of respect for them, and also to understand the toll of war. But now we have something different. We have a show dedicated to showing the faces, the names, and the towns that they come from, I believe, in sort of a montage of all the war dead in Iraq. And this one broadcaster is taking it off the air because he thinks it's political, and he thinks that it is against the public interest. Yes, who?
I think it's a mistake to target a program like Nightline. Of all the people who I can interview in a kind of fair and dispassionate and authoritative way, Ted Koppel, I think, is number one in this country doing that.
Right.
And this is the show, Nightline, that made its name during the hostage crisis in Lebanon in the Carter administration.
Right.
Iran, and that it wouldn't be on the air but for that. I mean, I think that's that, and they know that. They're just very worried that it will send out, that Americans will actually start taking notice in a way that they have done this week. There was a piece in the Washington Times, very conservative newspaper, saying that it was appropriate for the photographs of those coming home dead from the Pentagon should be shown to people.
There's a way to stop this.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it when we come back. Please call us through 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Tell us, you know, what you think. Is it political, Sinclair's decision? Is it different from the coffins? We'll be right back to hear from you here on Air America Radio.
Air America Radio, the left half of your brain.
The Majority Report.
I just got an email that a friend of mine saw a search string. He's an IT guy. And somebody was looking up Sam Cedar, drug addiction, and convictions.
Right, and it's for all we know, it's some right-wing guy that's going to, like, leak a story.
Well,
to try and just...
I have been busted for public urination and for riding my bike through a red light in New York City. And here's the worst part. I was doing them simultaneously.
Air America's Majority Report. Weeknights 8 to 11 on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley. That was AC/DC, of course. I wouldn't usually I'd get all excited and go right on AC/DC, but some doofus somewhere said, "Hey, Maron got all excited about the news, and that makes it more like college radio." And you know what? AC/DC rules, man. Woo! Ow!
Lord,
47 past the hour, and we're talking. We're going to take your calls right here in a second about Sinclair Broadcasting's not airing Nightline. You know, is it political? Should this be treated the same as the Coffin issue? Is it political on behalf of Sinclair? You know, what
is
it saying?
Political on behalf of Nightline? The bottom line is this: if you want to stop people from doing stupid stuff like this, and let me be very careful so that you don't have to hit the dump button over there. There's a simple way to do it. How did they go after Howard Stern?
They went after him through the FCC. Yeah.
Well, the families of people in these markets who have lost loved ones could band together, go to the FCC, and challenge the licenses of each and every one of the stations that refused to broadcast Nightline.
There's a little instruction for you.
Simple.
It is interesting, though, because I have seen no families complain about the publication of the pictures. All I saw in the Washington Times today was a quote from somebody in the family saying that the mother of somebody who was killed there, who liked the fact the pictures were published, it made her feel better about the sacrifice. Yes,
yeah.
Of the coffin draped in the flag coming back, made her feel better to know that her son was being treated respectfully.
866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. Dave in Long Island. Dave.
Morning, guys. Thanks
for
my call.
You bet.
First, I think it is very political on the part of Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if one of the things that might not challenge their FCC license would be for other locals in that area that aren't being blacked out to pick up the feed from the ABC network and be able to simulcast it.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's what you're saying.
That's
yeah,
an
so
interesting
another
one.
Way to watch it. Yeah.
Remember that the challenge to the FCC would be based on the fact that these people said publicly that they didn't think the broadcast was in the public interest. They are licensed to broadcast in the public interest. So if people think that they're wrong about what the public interest is, they certainly have the right to challenge.
We're talking to Ross in Kentucky. Ross.
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing? What's up, man?
Well, I just think you guys are, you know, kind of harsh on the president, trashing him for going over there and bombing Iraq, you know, trying to protect us from weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, but there's no indication that the weapons of mass destruction were there, Ross.
I'm sorry, you said mass destruction. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's some, yeah, there, you know, you can't find them, and they're probably very small. I mean, you know, algebraic equations or something that caused all our calculators to malfunction and everything.
Like very small, like, you know, they found them in Saddam's head?
Well, yeah, the algebraic equations, I'm sure. You know, mass destruction. I mean, they'll, you know, cause all our calculators to malfunction and things like that.
Oh, so you're saying they have some sort of secret kind of, like, microwave death ray thing that will sort of, like, provoke the meltdown of our technology?
Yeah, that's
thank
it.
You, Ross. I understand exactly what he's saying. Jeff in Orlando. Jeff.
Hey, good morning.
How you doing?
What's up?
You know, these are the type of people, and I don't know if that guy was joking or what, that the Republicans have played on for years, and these are the people that elect a person that I'm embarrassed of to call my president, and I think that's why he's lost the moral and ethical high ground, not only here in this country but around the world. But I'm wondering why, you know, every time I hear a poll, and they give all these glowing numbers or these approval ratings for this appointed president.
Yes.
Why no one's ever called me and asked me my opinion?
I know. I don't get the calls either, man. I don't know who they're calling. Who are they talking to, Jeff?
You know, I've wondered that for years. And you know something that I'm upset about, and that's the Democratic Party, that the Republicans came up with a brilliant strategy, I think along the time of the Reagan administration, where they started making the word liberal to be a four-letter word.
That's been going on since the early 70s.
Yeah.
Well, man, we've cut and run. You know, we hide, and I'm proud to be a liberal. If liberal means that I stand up for the rights of every man, woman, and child in this country, I'm proud to be a liberal. If I stand up for education for all our children, for health care for our families, for jobs, and for the opportunities to share in the American dream, I'm proud to be a liberal.
Well, thank you very much, man.
You need to get out there and volunteer.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Right. I mean, and we were going to talk. We'll talk about that later in the hour, I'm sure, about Kerry sort of coming under fire from the minority communities, from a lot of people for not really standing up for stuff. The number here is 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. Chris in Queens.
How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing good. I got mixed emotions about the viewing of the coffins on Nightline.
Yeah.
One is, I think, at this time.
Well, this isn't just coffins. This is actually pictures of the.
It's a roll call. It's the names and the photos.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah. I apologize.
It's a little more
personal.
I think
at this time in our history, I think it's important for the country to see something like that.
Yes.
But also at the same time, I'm disturbed by the commercialization of it. And that's my comment.
But does that mean it'd be okay if you put it on PBS? I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I just don't like the idea of cutting in the middle of it. It might be an advertisement for like Disney World or something like that.
I see what you're saying.
Okay.
Thanks
all right.
a lot for your call,
that's
Chris.
A legitimate concern.
That maybe if they air it, they should do it without commercials.
These Sinclair people aren't exactly impartial observers of the scene either.
You're saying you're questioning their journalistic integrity?
Well, two of their executives have contributed the max to Bush Cheney and contributed nothing to Kerry. So,
there you go.
Maybe they have a little partisan interest here in, helping their homie.
Sort of like a Clear Channel in the Stern controversy. Tony in Georgia. Tony.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine. I was going to say I agree with, not airing these names on television.
Yes.
If you want to pay honor to fallen veterans, I'm a Vietnam vet. My father was a World War II vet.
Yes.
There are national cemeteries all over the United States. They're open 365 days a year.
Yes.
You can visit the Vietnam Wall.
Why hasn't George Bush visited any of these cemeteries?
You can visit the Korean War Memorial. You can visit the World War II Memorial that will be opening this Memorial Day.
Tony, I got a question for you. Why do you think it might be that maybe if people saw the roll call, saw these people who've been killed, maybe that might spur them to, in fact, go to a cemetery?
This is a situation where the people who have lost loved ones,
yes.
This is a private moment for them. My father was buried at Arlington National Cemetery last September. I wouldn't want TV cameras, reporters, recording our moment of grief. This is something that the families need to go through in their privacy.
I think the media has been fairly respectful. They haven't been at funerals or intruding on families in that way. I think that the Nightline thing is simply a respectful reading of names and showing of photographs, and it's not very different from what they did on the first anniversary of 9/11 when they showed the photographs of people who were killed in that terrorist attack. Mm-hmm. I think it's
sort of an interesting bookend
for
months
to that. And I find it just hypocritical of an organization like Sinclair to say it's political to be showing these photographs on Nightline now, one year after the supposed end of the war, as Bush called it. When nobody complained in the height of the ground war, when all day long the networks, especially I think it was CNN or some of the cable channels, they had boards of photographs with troops that died and ribbons that they were hanging on. No one said at that time that's manipulating the public into being pro-war. You can't have it both ways.
I think you're right. I think you cannot have it both ways. And at some point, paying tribute certainly is something that we all ought to at least be reminded of sacrifice.
And also, I think
our
president should go to a funeral occasionally. I think he should really, sort of step up and show his respect that way. And I think that this is a poignant message. I don't think it's necessarily that political message. I think it's the right thing to do. I'm going to do now, I'm going to take a shift here, a dramatic shift in tone, and do my dream diary for today. I was told by my therapist to make note of my dreams as I go through this period of adjustment to the radio situation so we can maybe learn something. I've been sharing them here. All right, here's this one today. Let me see if I can read my scribble. All right, so me and Bush and Cheney are in the Old West, and we're prospecting for gold. and we are grizzled, man. I mean, I got nasty old cowboy hat on that flips up in the front, and I got like three teeth left. Bush looks like he's wearing dirt with clothes attached. And Cheney's like at least 200 years old. I mean, and I can see his heart through his chest, and it's metal, and it's making a whirring sound. And he's muttering to himself like he keeps going, got in the Halliburton. So it's 1 billion degrees, all right? And we're all digging, we're digging, we're digging. All of a sudden, I see something shiny. Gold, I say. It's a nugget as big as my head. And I start crying and doing my crazy old prospector dance. Going, woo! Right? And attaboy, Mark, Bush says. We'll split it three ways, just like we said. Cheney's eyes get all wide, and he starts like, you know, but that, then, that night around the campfire, I can't sleep because I'm terrified one of them will run off with my giant gold nugget, and because it's really hot. So I decide to run back to town through the desert with my nugget. Cheney and Bush run me down, steal my nugget, and the next thing I know, they're covering me with barbecue sauce while I turn slowly on a spit. And I have this weird moment where I realize, hey, I'm wearing a clown's nose. And I can hear Cheney laughing. And you know what? I smell delicious. I would eat me. I wake up and my bed is covered with pico de gallo. Yeah, sir. Getting weirder and weirder. This is a kind of an interesting transition from a very powerful conversation to a very lighthearted one that could be questionable, but I think it's a nice way to evolve the show.
I just want to tell you that the tribute to those who have died in the Iraq War in combat is also going to be shown live on a large television screen in New York Times Square tonight, mm-hmm. when Nightline is broadcast. So you can't get sort of more in the mainstream than that, the new Times Square.
Yeah. Now, hasn't the NewsHour been doing something along these same lines already, or all along?
Yeah, I think they've been doing, you know, counts and just, you know, reporting on the daily casualties.
Coming up, Joe Wilson's book is already making waves, and it's only coming out today. Plus, the morning devotional, courtesy of our own Mark Maron. When we come back, here on Air America Radio.
Your lawn is being taken over by dandelions and crabgrass.
Help!
With Weed Be Gone, one product gets rid of the dandelions,
but not the crabgrass.
The other kills the crabgrass,
but not the lawn weeds. There's gotta be a better way.
There is. Bayer Advanced All-in-One Weed Killer. It kills lawn weeds plus crabgrass in just one easy step, and it won't harm your lawn.
Two kinds of weeds, one simple solution.
Bayer Advanced. Better thinking, better results.
Hey, y'all, I'm Kixbrook.
I'm Ronnie Dunn.
And we're Brooks.
And Dunn for Rad. And I've got a four-letter word for you. Don't. As in, don't drive drunk.
Yep, and I got a three-letter word for you, as in get. Get the keys.
When you see someone who's about to drive under the influence,
get the keys.
Because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio, the morning devotional is coming up. Plus, we've got Recovery Corner on tap, and now we've got the headlines. And, like, yeah, in a matter of seconds, the headlines are coming.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The Intelligence Committee in Washington, D.C. has picked up on suspicious activity around several Texas oil refineries, leading them to believe the facilities may be vulnerable to attacks before the November election. A published report this morning says Washington Intelligence, Texas law enforcement, and the Department of Homeland Security are paying close attention to the developments. They say individuals have been caught photographing or filming the perimeters of the refineries in recent months. Also of concern is a report that as many as 20 Middle Eastern individuals in Texas are applying to have their surnames changed to Latino-sounding surnames on a weekly basis. Bush administration's Department of Homeland Security is reporting the activity and believes it may be part of an effort to conceal identities. Israel's Prime Minister Ariel Sharon isn't saying that he will resign, but he considers this weekend's vote in the Likud party's referendum calling for Israel's withdrawal from the Gaza Strip as a vote of confidence. Sharon has been touting the proposal, which has also won the backing of the Bush administration. That same plan has aroused the ire of Palestinian community. Sharon says rejection of the plan that he believes is widely supported by Israelis could spell the end of the Likud party. Secretary of State Colin Powell has resurfaced in Copenhagen. Yesterday, he held a joint news conference with Danish Prime Minister Anders Fogh Rasmussen, during which he expressed optimism that poll numbers in the states will rebound in favor of President Bush once Iraq becomes stable.
I think that as we get on top of the security situation, I think we will, and as we put in place an interim government, and as the UN gets more involved, and as the reconstruction effort picks up, and as the American people see that Iraqis are taking responsibility for their own future, then I think the polls will turn in the other direction.
State Secretary Colin Powell, Iraq is far from stable this morning. Fallujah remains the scene of unrest despite efforts to pull back U.S. troops. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Your mother's got out her photo album.
Oh, poor kids.
And this is your father.
Where's his head?
Camera missed it, I guess. Here's Aunt Judy.
Her hair used to be orange.
I guess the camera was a little off. Here's Cousin Tommy.
He's fuzzy.
This Mother's Day, take the guesswork out of Mom's photography and printing.
Hey, Mom, open this.
With HP's PhotoSmart 735 digital camera and 7960 photo printer with breakthrough 8-ink technology for brilliant colors that resist fading for generations.
Wow. Is it complicated?
No, Mom, it's HP. It's pretty foolproof.
It's what proof?
And now, buy both and get a $75 mail-in rebate. Learn more about HP cameras, printers, and PCs at your nearest retailer or hpshopping.com/mom. Color results based on Wilhelm Imaging Research, Inc. using the HP 58 photo inkjet print cartridge on HP Premium Plus photo papers.
Look, Grandma just took a picture of Dad standing in the corner.
Nice.
HP. Invent.
Some counties in the U.S. now have more than 30% of their residents behind bars. A new prison study by the Urban Institute also found that nearly a third of the counties have at least one prison. The number of federal and state prisons grew from 592 in 1974 to over 1,000 by the end of the century, and the number of inmates soared to 1.3 million in 2000 from about 316,000 in 1980. Texas led the way in prison construction, building 120 prisons in two decades, or an average of nearly six a year. Texas is in a league of its own, the report concluded. Just a month before its deadline, the United Nations is still trying to find troops for Haiti. UN officials and diplomats have told the New York Times that the organization is struggling to sign up peacekeeping troops and French-speaking police officers to take over security in the Caribbean nation from an American-led interim force. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
I think the biggest threat to the environment is the idea that now, and what I mean now, this moment in time is all there is.
That's singer, songwriter, and activist Michael Fronte from the band Spearhead.
The caretakers of this continent before Europeans came here had a very clear vision. They said, we are here to take care of this land for the seven generations of people before us.
Part of the solution, or are we part of the pollution?
And I think there has to be an accountability and a mindset that every person in this planet has, that each of us is responsible for what we produce and what we put out into the world.
Fronte says there has to be a shift in our thinking.
And that shift has to be that we have to think about the seven generations to come.
That's Michael Fronte on Planet Check.
Planet Check, your daily one-minute terrestrial examination.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
We're 100% focused on environmental programs, human rights, animal rights, social justice.
That's Sarah Haynes, president of the Spitfire Agency, a full-service marketing agency that focuses on nonprofits, responsible businesses, and other activist-related ventures.
We've also produced the Indigo Girls Honor the Earth tour.
Last year in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park, 10,000 people showed up for another Spitfire production.
We also do Julia Butterfly, created an event with her called We the Planet that modeled of all the solutions as well.
On every level of production, the festival was earth-friendly.
So the stage was run biodiesel, and the medical tent was run solar, and all of the art was completely recycled.
Find out more at SpitfireAgency.com. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check, your daily one-minute terrestrial examination.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Imagine if flowers fell from the sky.
Imagine if there are no bombs.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Imagine if everybody was happy.
It's easy if you try.
Imagine if everyone would live in peace and harmony.
No hell below us.
Imagine if there were no borders.
Imagine a worldwide movement that works to protect the dignity and rights of every man, woman, and child.
Imagine all the people.
And imagine it works. That's Amnesty International. Join the millions around the globe who support basic human rights. Call 1-800-AMNESTY or visit amnestyusa.org, and the world will live as one.
Mark Maron here along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Today I'll have our morning devotional as usual, plus our President Bush's campaign ads touting his record or bashing his rival. Come on, take a guess. We'll tell you later, but right now I've got Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott here with me. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Friday morning, and what's in store for the weekend, folks? Sue?
What's in store for the weekend?
Yes.
You think I could dare share it here with you on the radio?
Wow.
I'm going to London.
Nice.
Yes.
Visit the family?
Yes.
See the kids who no longer know their mommy?
Exactly. 30 hours. Strange woman comes home for one night.
Uh-oh.
Is that really her, Dad?
Now, what time do you come back?
Do you already need to know this?
Where's the other nice lady that's here when you're not here?
Yeah, really.
Oh, you guys are so mean.
No, the kids are with your mom, right? And him and your husband.
Yeah, right. Yes, thank you for all your concern.
No, I'm serious. I'm being friendly here. I met your kids.
They're great kids.
They really are great kids.
They're good kids.
They were. They were quiet and read books while we were downing burritos and drinking beer. That qualifies them as good kids,
good kids,
right?
That's right.
I'm just wondering about the issues they're going to have with their mom being away so much when this delicate age, you know, they might end up like me, Sue.
That is my worst fear. But there's always therapy.
Yeah, there is.
Every day.
Believe me,
every
I know.
Day.
I was
as long as they don't become stand-up comics, I figure I would have done okay.
I went to therapy yesterday, and believe me, it was an hour of like, well, Sue is, you know, but... No, I mean, it's just we're not, you know. What about you, Riley? What are you doing?
I am doing the same thing I do every weekend, trying to get myself back in shape after many years of abuse and neglect, and watching my child grow, which is one of the greatest things that you can.
That's good. You could lie on a couch and do that. Hey, honey, I'm watching you grow.
I'm watching you grow. And it's
keep growing.
It's a wonderful
keep growing.
Thing.
You're doing a great job.
Yep.
Great
on
growing.
Pop me the burritos.
Thing. So wait, you telling me you're going to get in shape? Wait, what do you do?
I'm going to go to a health club and work out. I'm going to do some biking. I got my bike all fixed except for an excruciating noise it makes every time I hit the rear brakes.
Mark, okay. Riley, you notice how Markman is really grinning when you're saying that?
I just doesn't believe you. I'm trying
look
to picture
him.
Riley
at
a
devilish
it's
smile.
All true.
I'm trying to picture Riley at the health club, just sort of like, you know, maybe sitting down on something, doing two reps.
No. I do the cardio stuff. I do the bicycling and
yeah,
and I
try to go to the gym. I'm, you know, in and out with it. I don't know, when did all men become gay? When did that happen exactly? A couple of years ago? I mean, like, I never thought
when
about
women
this.
Women stopped sleeping with them, and they figured they had to do something
do
about
something,
it.
Do something, yeah.
It's so weird to me. Like, you know, literally, like, I'll see dudes now who are, you know, carrying a paunch. I'm like, wow, man, how's that guy live with himself? You know, how does anybody like him? But do women really judge men on that stuff?
Yes, they do. But wait, where does the gay thing come into this?
No, I just mean the attention.
The narcissism.
Gay.
The attention to body.
He's assuming that narcissism
because
is a gay thing.
No, I'm a narcissistic person without the physical things, but I know that a lot of gay men put a lot of effort into maintaining a youthful sort of and muscular body because as they get older...
I started reading men's fashion magazines. It's since men became corrupted by the same artificially high standards that women have been screwed up on for years.
Let me rephrase it then. When did all men become girls? Is that... Is that better? Is that more along the lines of
what... Yeah, ever since companies wanted them to. Ever since they began promoting gyms, that they came out with moisturizers and facial cleansers and all that stuff that guys now buy and they didn't used to.
God, man, sometimes it's like if I don't go to the gym for a few days, I really start to think like, you know, like it's over.
I'm glad guys are kind of concerned about that. Now. I don't want the ridiculous self-obsession to be the domain of women only.
But you
guys need to be screwed up about yourselves, too.
The weird thing is that a lot of times I just think like, you know, when you're on the gym, like at my age, which isn't old, but I'm on that weird, you know, I'm old enough to resent.
You're on the cusp.
I'm old enough to resent people for being young.
Old enough to talk about it.
Yeah, but sometimes I'm on the treadmill and I'm just sort of like going, oh man, is death coming? I can see it. You know what I mean? Like, but it doesn't matter. It's all just a genetic crapshoot anyways. Sometimes I'm sitting there thinking like, my heart is indestructible. I run so much. How can it be anything? It's just pure muscle and will never die.
Isn't that your Dick Cheney voice? That is what Dick Cheney says.
Yeah,
my heart is indestructible. It's artificial.
Yeah, but mine isn't artificial. But don't you think that you're holding off death? Isn't that some of the reason we go?
Well, yeah, there's a guy in a Grim Reaper suit.
Yeah, right behind you. See him? He's got a hood on. And
they should have one of those guys walk around in a gym with those treadmills. That would be great. There you are kind of running, looking at some cable channel, and there's a guy with a scythe coming
hilarious.
Up behind you.
That would be really hilarious just to have that they paid guys to just like be at gyms in the death outfit.
Yeah. I mean, I hope I'm working out because I'd like to feel more healthy. I'm not really that body conscious.
I am. I like to
wear loose-fitting clothes. I like the David Byrne look. You know?
My mother made me crazy. My mother used to put diet pills in my lunch bag when I was in junior high because I was just a little chunky and she couldn't live with it.
Really? Just a little chunky.
And I'm not saying I hate my mom, but man, I'm screwed up. So we were talking about this, the Sinclair Stations. It's a broadcasting, I guess, conglomerate.
62 in all.
62 stations are not going to air the... ABC's affiliate, okay, they're not going to carry Nightline, which will air the names and photos of soldiers who have been killed in combat in Iraq. And the Sinclair General Counsel, Barry Faber, tells the site that we took this off of. We find it to be contrary to the public interest.
Yeah, now, it's only eight stations. There are only eight ABC affiliates.
They're going to be running like five episodes of Maury.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well,
Maury,
what is,
Power Rangers. You
what
name
is
it.
The, you know, the public interest in this case? You know, you were going to talk about the politics of it there, Mark.
Well, $16,550. Let's talk that to start with. This is money that was given by executives of Sinclair to, guess who? George W. Bush.
$16,500.
Remember, the max is only $2,000.
No contributions to carry. No, they're not playing both sides. They're not hedging their bets. These guys are Republican supporters.
These are all, now this is the hard money now. This is hard money, $16,550. Soft money's a lot more than that. But there are people, $250 as late as February of this year. Last September, someone from New Albany, Ohio, who's a member of the Sinclair Broadcast Group, gave $2,000, the maximum. A couple other guys from Cockeysville, Maryland. Is
that really
I don't know. But on December 8th, somebody named Smith from Cockeysville gave $2,000, the maximum allowable. Now, when you get
That's cockeyed.
Yeah, it sure is. Now, when
I don't want to offend residents of Cockeysville. They could be streaming us right now.
Right now. Oh well, hey, call us now if you're from Cockeysville.
And if you are, and tell us the team names.
Yeah, right.
So really, ABC News should come out and say, not only do we believe that our live broadcast in Times Square tonight and our show reading the names and showing the photographs of those who've died in Iraq is of public interest, but they should say that Sinclair has contributed to the Republican Party.
Well, it's like
at the top of the show.
It's not like Nightline. You know, Nightline is a respectable journalistic, you know, news program. It's going to be treated with, you know, the utmost dignity and respect. And this is also the Republicans are the ones that are all about, you know, respecting the military, you know, honoring the dead. Yet they've never, you know, they're really against, you know, any sort of public awareness of the casualty toll among
the
public.
Because they're afraid. They're afraid of the byproducts. We've seen it happen before, and they're afraid. And, of course, they're not going to say anything about the money donations because they don't want to lose these affiliates. I mean, ABC depends on affiliates like these eight. to set their ad rates.
They they're going to let
at once they got a problem.
And they're all privately owned by this Sinclair group, so you know they have to accommodate them because of the money. Mm-hmm. So and they have to allow these affiliates to make their own decisions, so they're not going to fight for that.
No.
But this is a relatively small thing, isn't it? Eight stations, really, not playing Nightline tonight. What would be more significant and would show us if really the American people were offended by this would be if the advertisers pulled their slots from Nightline, and there's no evidence of that so far.
We had one guy call earlier that thought it might be more respectful if it wasn't tied in with advertising.
Yeah.
Which I think is a kind of interesting point, that if you're going to be, you know, showing this type of material, you know, to cut away to like, you know, come to Disneyland, you know, is a little tasteless.
But that happens all the time. You get that every night on the news. You could make that point every time you see the latest toll of deaths of Iraqis and U.S. coalition members in Iraq. That's always true on a commercial television.
It's all what it's really all about on the bottom line.
And it won't even be Disney. It'll be some, you know, heartburn or, you know, gas or swollen tummy or
dialysis
or whatever.
ABC is owned by Disney, isn't it?
Yeah. ABC is, in fact, owned.
So, you know, it's the same people that brought
it. Hillary Duff!
But that would be even more, you know, troubling is if Disney company said we're not going to show it. That would be troubling.
Well, that won't happen.
No.
So Joe Wilson's book, this is Joe Wilson, the diplomat who, you know, said that there was no African uranium connection, whose wife was outed by up in a, you know, heavies in the Bush administration's book is coming out today. What's it called, Sue?
I love this title. Of all the books that have come out in the last few weeks, this is my favorite, because first of all, it has 20 words in the title, and it also shows the point of, you know, incredible personal acrimony that he comes from. The politics of truth inside the lies that led to war and betrayed my wife's CIA's identity. I love that. Betrayed my wife's CIA's identity. A diplomat's memoir. He's clearly shared the diplomatic bit.
He just wants to make sure that all the information about the book is on the book when you look at it right away.
Well, it's interesting that this book's coming out now. I mean, his wife, Valerie Plame, we can say her name now because she's already been outed. He was the ambassador in Africa during the time at which there was an investigation into whether uranium had been bought from Niger, the African country Niger, you know, and his wife's name was leaked to Robert Novak, the conservative columnist, as being the CIA employee, a staff, a senior person who organized an investigation into that.
And this is the same president who said that, you know, the most important thing is protecting the privacy of our covert operations people abroad.
Well, it's a federal crime to reveal the name of a CIA operative.
Mm-hmm.
And there are supposedly an investigation going on into this at the moment.
Give me the break. Who are the guys? Because I got a breakdown of who they are here.
All that he has said that Robert Novak, the columnist, all he has said that there were two senior administration officials. He won't give the names, but there are three.
But Wilson.
But Wilson, he won't say exactly who it is, but he says that it could either be Cheney's chief of staff, Lewis, nicknamed Scooter Liddy.
Sometimes called Dick Cheney's Dick Cheney.
Okay. Or it could be Karl Rove, the White House chief political advisor.
Sometimes called Satan.
Or it could be Elliot Abrams.
Just a bad man.
Was one of the
Iran-Contra
guys working in the Reagan administration, who I once chased into an elevator in the Justice Department and jammed the door open to ask him a question.
Good for you.
Yeah,
that's very
amazing.
Ambitious.
In my very athletic day.
We'll be back.
I did.
We'll be back with the Morning Devotional, Recovery Corner, News, Sue, Mark, me, right here on Air America Radio.
Radio. Substance always. Pledge drive never.
mind, Randy Rhodes.
See, this is the thinking people have. They think that Osama is the problem, which is true, and that we should attack Iraq. That right there should tell you everything you need to know about what is going on in this country and why it's wrong. Say, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. The Germans declared war on us, which most people don't realize. Let's attack Mexico.
Randy Rhodes, afternoons 3 to 7 on Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio with Mark Riley and Stu Ellicott. Hope you're having a decent morning. And now it's time for something that we do every day at this time. It's the morning devotional. Dear Lord, we don't thank you nearly enough. You're always out there behind the scenes making it happen. You're quiet, but you're a closer. First, thanks for getting George W. Bush through yesterday's commission hearing. You're a sport. You didn't let him make a fool of himself in front of the cameras. Of course, there weren't any cameras, but I don't want to dilute my shout-out to you, Lord. Second, we want to thank you for the Sinclair Broadcast Group. Their decision not to air Nightline with the names and the pictures of the soldiers who died in Iraq is right on. Sacrifice, loss, responsibility, these are mourning ideas. Late night should be about unwinding. Eliminate or battle bots. That's perfect. Finally, thanks to the new World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. But if you could keep Sinclair from covering it, that'd be great. It's kind of a downer. You know what I'm saying, Lord? Amen. Wow. Another powerful devotional. It's been a powerful morning.
Yeah. So who's in a deeper attack mode? The president or John Kerry? A new study from the University of Missouri says it's, guess who? George W. Bush.
Big time.
In other words, Bush says more negative things about Kerry than the other way around. He also dogs Kerry more often than he cites his own accomplishments as president.
Really?
Gee, I wonder why.
Because he might stutter. He can't find any good footage.
Can't find anything to say.
Yeah.
Terry, you didn't give me enough time to figure that one out.
He's
not going to mention job creation, is he, given that 2.5 million have been lost?
No, he can't do that.
What's amazing, though, is that, you know, with all the money that the Republicans have, okay, and all the ads they put into it, you know, and considering that the, you know, Democrat minorities are starting to criticize Kerry, and then there's Democratic cannibalism, you know, within the party itself, and, you know, on top of the 50 to 100 million the Republicans have spent, he's still ahead.
Yeah, he's
still
ahead.
A little bit ahead in the polls.
New York Times CBS News poll, Kerry 46, Bush 44. I believe that one was done without Ralph Nader. I don't think they used Nader's numbers at all in there. In 1996, incumbent Bill Clinton had a 14-point lead over Bob Dole. Since 1976, that was Jimmy Carter's year, no incumbent president who trailed a challenger at this point went on to win re-election.
Those are some good stats there, Riley.
Hey.
It's interesting to think of Bob Dole again, isn't it, at this point? Because there you have the Bush administration bashing John Kerry's war record. Do we have any memories of Clinton bashing Dole's authority to be a war hero? There's somebody who was decorated, who was injured, disabled. Was it Second World War?
I believe it was. We have to check on that. But I don't think
they had the gall to go after him and denigrate his ability to be a war hero.
In fact, Clinton, on several occasions, and I remember this because I was at the convention in 96, went out of his way to praise Dole.
Yeah, Clinton was a respectful draft avoider. These guys are completely disrespectful, draft-avoiding chicken hawks. I mean, Wolfowitz...
Well, you're channeling Frank Lautenberg now, the Democratic...
Wolfowitz, he was in front of Senate yesterday in a subcommittee hearing or a committee hearing, and he couldn't even draw to mind the number of casualties of people who have died in Iraq, American soldiers. He was like,
number of military deaths.
Yeah, deaths. He was sort of like, yeah, it was like something like 500. And it's like, it's not that. It's 720 something.
And it was also, he also said 300 some odd were killed in action when in fact it's been, I believe, 500 some odd.
I mean, this is the guy that designed the war.
Yeah.
This is the designer of the war, Wolfowitz, is too out of touch to know how many people are dying in the war that he designed.
Well, you know, the attack ads on Bush's part, while certainly not unprecedented, are very unusual for this early in the campaign. Usually in a re-election campaign, you are touting your record. You are touting what you've been able to do during your first 4 years and making that as the case for the next four. We don't see a lot of that out of George W. Bush. What we see instead are broadsides against John Kerry's record. Now, as Mark pointed out, Kerry is taking some heat from black and Latino groups who say his inner circle is not diverse. He spoke to the National Conference of Black Mayors in Philadelphia Thursday, but even as he did that, two Latino leaders criticized the campaign's outreach to their community. Even some of his black supporters say the candidate has work to do in terms of outreach and in terms of staffing. Now, we ought to say these are not new concerns. I was in, where was I in 2000? Oh, L.A., that's right, during the Democratic Convention when Maxine Waters led a group of members of the Congressional Black Caucus who were prepared to withhold their support of the Gore-Lieberman ticket because of Lieberman's position on affirmative action. They went into a meeting, and they did it actually at the New York delegation, for 3 hours with Joe Lieberman. They came out, and everything was cool. This is not an insurmountable problem. It's something he has to pay attention to because he needs to get an energized black and Latino electorate out in order to win, and he needs to get at least 85%.
Especially, I think, pay attention to Latino groups, given that they are the fastest growing minority and that it's been they've been taken for granted by the Democrats for so many years that they would automatically, you know, vote left of center. And that hasn't actually been true. The Republicans did a very, very good job recruiting and getting voter registration among Latinos in Southern California, where I was living at the in the 2000 election. And the Democrats have to be careful about that.
Extremely careful.
Go ahead. Recovery Corner. Plus, what does Clinton's former White House counsel have to say about Bush's appearance before the 9/11 panel? We'll find out here on Air America Radio.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. There's word that some intelligence analysts now suspect that several Texas oil refineries may be the target of attacks before the November elections. The development stems from information received by the Washington Intelligence Community. Operatives within the community cite the movement of who they described as Middle Eastern men casing refineries in recent months. In Iraq, the fighting rages on in Fallujah in spite of efforts to bring about a lasting peace, despite a tentative agreement to have U.S. troops withdraw from the city. Some fighting with insurgents has been reported. Some counties in the United States now have more than 30% of their residents behind bars. A new prison study by the Urban Institute also found that nearly a third of the counties have at least one prison. And just a month before its deadline, the United Nations is still trying to find troops for Haiti. UN officials and diplomats have told the New York Times that the organization is struggling to sign up peacekeeping troops and French-speaking police officers to take over security in the Caribbean nation from an American-led interim force. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
It's morning. It's morning out there. It's Friday morning. I'm Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott here on Air America's Morning Sedition. I would like to say that the total number killed in Iraq is 722. I didn't have that exact number. Neither did Defense Secretary Wolfowitz. Deputy Defense Secretary.
He was only off by a couple hundred.
Right now, we were talking about John Kerry. Will the good John Kerry be the one voters cast their ballot for this November? Joining us by phone from Washington, D.C., is Newsweek magazine's Washington correspondent, Richard Wolff. His latest column tells the tale of the two Kerrys. So, how are you,
Richard? I'm fine. How are you?
It's good. Describe the good Kerry and the bad Kerry, could you?
Sure. Good Kerry speaks from the heart. He speaks from his life experience, and that doesn't include his 20 years in the Senate. He's passionate, direct. He can connect with a crowd, all the things that people don't think of John Kerry. And then there's bad Kerry, who is more familiar, I guess, to many people, kind of wooden, speaks about his 20 years in the Senate, and loses his audience. It's amazing to me that people don't think of the first. They only look at the second. It's also amazing that I think he can flip from one to the other, sometimes in the same breath.
So is this sort of like an autopilot mode that he lapses into when he's not being as genuine?
Yeah, it kind of is. You know, I listened to him do a speech last week in front of a bunch of newspaper editors. He had a teleprompter, so you could kind of compare what he was supposed to say with what he said. And he was trying to kind of ad-lib and do a Clinton thing.
Yeah.
But the more he improvised, the more heavy it got, the more he talked about this committee or that committee, and he just kind of flubbed his soundbite. So I think he was just trying to pack too much in there.
So he's you mean it got heavy in terms of content. Do you think he's a sort of a heavy-hearted guy? Do you think he's a very serious dude?
He is, but, you know, I've seen him very, you know, joshing around, kind of almost like Bush on the plane with reporters, back-flapping.
Really? You know, telling some jokes and stuff?
He can tell jokes.
Yeah?
You know, he can tell jokes. He goes out and plays sports all the time. He's a sports nut.
Uh-huh. You got any good Kerry jokes? Has he laid any good jokes on you?
You know, like Bush, this is not verbal humor, okay? It's not sophisticated.
Yeah.
You try and write it down, and it's a shrug. It's a look.
Okay. So you're not saying
he's telling
off-color jokes. He's just doing physical jokes.
No.
Why do you think it is that he loses audiences so quickly when he talks about his time in the Senate? Is it just the Senate itself? Is it something that people zone out on?
Yeah, it is. It's like procedural language. It's obscure. And he slips into jargon really quickly. Also, you know, I hate to say this about people in Congress, but it doesn't sound like they're doing anything because they're sitting on a committee or they're debating. This is a candidate who's got a long life outside of politics that doesn't include Vietnam. And this is something I picked up in my web column. He was a prosecutor. He actually did stuff, and it was tough stuff about crime. So, you know, he's got a lot of things he can talk about, but it just doesn't come up that much.
So let's shift gears a little bit. Two Democratic panel members left early at the 9/11 the testimony of the vice president and president. Why do you think they took off?
It was a discussion, actually.
A discussion.
Even testimony.
Yeah, exactly. A little chat.
You think they were bored?
It literally was a fireside chat.
How could you have better things to do than hang out with the president?
Well, maybe they were trying to send a message.
Kerry especially, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't terribly forthcoming. It wasn't that useful. It wasn't on the record. There was no transcript. You know, I haven't spoken to them, so I don't know their exact reason. I mean, most people would rearrange their schedule if they're talking to the president of the United States, especially when they pushed so hard to get him there.
My feeling was maybe they just were like, you know, we've heard this all before. This is nothing new. There's nothing different.
Well, Lee Hamilton did have a fixed appointment, and they had already told Bush and Cheney, and they had accepted that, and they brought the chat forward by half an hour to accommodate him, and he still had to leave early. And Bob Kerry had to go and meet Senator Bob Domenici.
Pete Domenici.
I don't know why.
Yeah, because it's politics. It's a statement. I mean, look, they were being snubbed. The whole commission was being snubbed by the president, if only because, you know, he was appearing there with the vice president. So this is Washington politics. When someone's doing something bad, you see this in the Senate all the time. People just get up out of their seats and walk out. It's for a very polite place, it can also be very rude.
On the good John Kerry, bad John Kerry thing, how does that differ from the wooden Gore and the supposedly, you know, let your hair down, dance the night away with Tipper Gore?
Well, I, you know, There are some similar things about Al Gore and John Kerry, same generation, long experience in the Senate. The difference is that Al Gore could try and he was a kind of a bad actor. He could do lots of different things and try and project himself to different crowds. And that sort of gave him an element of inconsistency. John Kerry doesn't do that. He's one or the other. He's direct or he's very dull. And it's not like
he's a good actor or he just can't be bothered to act.
I think he can't be bothered to act, actually.
Oh, okay.
And that's not a bad thing. I mean, there's no reason why you should be, you know, an African-American preacher one minute and, a labor union leader the next.
But he's definitely got the juice, don't you think? I mean, he's definitely, he'd be a great president.
I think he's trying to act presidential.
And that's a liability right now.
Well, you know, there are times when you should do it, and there are times when you have to just be a regular guy. And that's part of being a communicator. I mean, a lot of what politicians have to do is not just noodle the policy, they have to talk to people.
And whenever he's being a regular guy, you know, like if he goes skiing and, you know, if he goes to church, they always make him, they attack him for that. The attack machine of the Republicans is kind of mind-blowing. And getting back to the committee or to the discussion really quickly, I mean, the Republicans are already spinning this whole thing as sort of like, you know, we're just trying to help out, you know, we're just trying to give them what, you know, we know about this. How can the Democrats spin the appearance to benefit them?
Well, first of all, I thought actually, you know, think what you like about George Bush, but he handled the politics of it really well yesterday. He was out there. You'd never have known that the guy didn't want to talk to these people. He was such a great conversation. It was so helpful.
He was all excited that he answered all the questions.
Yeah, it was great. You know, they should do it more often. You know, they handled the politics really well. He even apologized for the smear on Jamie Gorelick that his own attorney general had done. So, you know, they played some very clever politics there. Having said that, I think, you know, if you look at the whole thing that the commission has done, they have, from a very weak position, managed to get a huge amount out of a very reluctant administration. You know, it's not a Democratic or Republican thing. The commission has done its work really effectively, getting stuff declassified, putting pressure on, getting Condi Rice to show up and turn up. I mean, those are big victories for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how long do you think we'll have to wait before we actually know some details of what Bush and Cheney actually said in the chat?
Oh, about 24 hours.
Really? No, that long?
Yeah, I mean, this commission is so open to the press. Now, they have to handle this one more sensitively than just appearing on Larry King Live, but, you know, this is a pretty open, leaking organization, the commission, and you know, they won't want their fingerprints on it, but stuff is leaking out all over the place.
I want to get back to the good Kerry, bad Kerry thing for a minute.
Sure.
How would you suggest the good Kerry handle tomorrow's anniversary of President Bush's declaration of the end of the war? I mean, I assume he's going to have something to say. How would we know if it's the good Kerry talking or the bad Kerry?
Well, look at the way they've handled the war in terms of John Kerry's performance over the last week or two. He's felt that he's had to talk in terms of policy details, as if people really want to know the specifics of how he's going to solve the problem in Iraq. That's fine at one level. You know, presidential candidates need to have that out there. But he kind of slips into bad Kerry very quickly here, talking about the UN and internationalization. They're important, but frankly, in terms of winning votes, most people aren't going to vote for John Kerry because he can get a UN resolution through. On the other hand, he does have something very compelling to say from his own experience about Vietnam. Not just, you know, these guys are attacking me about Vietnam, about medals or whatever, but he can say that he knows how to protect the troops because he protected his own guys in Vietnam. He can relate from Iraq to what he went through in Vietnam. He can say, I have fought in a difficult war against a determined enemy when the politicians didn't know how to get out, and I can protect our troops now because I've done it before myself. So he can relate things to his own personal life. I mean, my job isn't to give John Kerry advice, but there are compelling things in his personal story that directly relate to Iraq.
Thank you very much, Richard Wolff.
Thank you.
Richard Wolff, Washington correspondent for Newsweek magazine. We're gonna go up to Recovery Corner next. We're going to take your calls. We want to know what you think about the panel. Will the panel be of any use in the long run? Call us at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270 here at Air America Radio.
The O'Franken Factor.
On Friday's O'Franken Factor, Al has an embarrassing encounter in Air America's unisex bathroom with the most powerful woman in Washington, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what Maureen Dowd has today.
Get out! The O'Franken Factor. Essential radio from Air America.
Friday morning, yes! It's 14 before the hour. I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
Is that our heartbeats in the background?
It is. We want to know what you think the effect of the 9/11 panel is going to be, you know, after you know, hearing from the president. 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. But now it's that time where I have to say every morning, and this is to the chagrin of some alcoholics and yet to the happiness of others, my name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Today in Recovery Corner, I reach out as usual to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. And as always, I am offering my help, reaching out to my temporary sponsee, George W. All right, George, look, I bring this up about once a week. Personal inventory. Why it's important. I'm a little upset because I just read an article saying that a large percentage of your campaign spots are totally negative attack ads on Kerry. All right, look at me. I'm right here. All right, look at me. Now, what do we decide about John Kerry? Is John Kerry your problem? Hmm? Who's been president for the past 3 years? John Kerry? No. And not really you either. But that's not my point. My friend, you need to take a dip in Lake U. Remember, time wasted in getting even can never be used in getting ahead. Wherever you go, there you are. You getting the drift, are you, Georgie? Beating on John Kerry is just a substitute for drinking. You're acting out, my friend. Why don't you own your side of the street and clean it up a little bit? Besides, he's a war hero and could probably kick your ass. How's that grab you? So let it go. Just let it go. Remember, anger's just a letter away from danger. It works if you work it, so work it. You're worth it and live it. Keep the plug in the jug. God doesn't wake up and think he's you. All right. Think. That's it. Recovery Corner, just for today.
I could see that on a T-shirt, take a dip in Lake U.
They have
that's
those
a good slogan.
They have, there is, AA is filled with nothing but slogans, and I'm sure you could get a T-shirt if,
I like that
if
one.
You'd like. They're all very good and informative and help.
Really?
Absolutely.
I'm glad to know that.
Absolutely. Like I'll do one right now on you.
Okay.
First things first. How can that
I know
not
that
help?
One. You already did that one. I thought you were laying a new one on me.
I will tomorrow.
Take a dip in Lake Mead.
I've got plenty.
Uh-oh.
I definitely do. So we're taking your calls. Here we go. Who are we going to? Ted, New Jersey. Ted.
Good morning.
Hey, buddy.
About 6 months ago, I'll be brief, Joe Biden said if Bush was Clinton, the Republicans would have torn his skin off of what's going on. Well, I'm waiting. All we have is Lautenberg, Byrd, both in his 70s and 80s, and Kennedy speaking up on Kerry's behalf. Where are the Democrats?
I'm with you. We're waiting, too.
They slept for 8 years under Clinton. They let these lunatics take over the country. Where are they? Pelosi says nothing. Daschle says nothing. Name me one besides the guys I mentioned who have said boo. I mean, the other day, Lautenberg called Cheney a chicken hawk. I made me happy. Maybe a heart sing.
I know. He was all worked up, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
It was wonderful.
It was great.
We need that.
I think you're right, and there's a lot of division among the Democrats, and they—I don't know if they're just the opportunistic, or they—you know—they're not willing to get behind their guy. It's really annoying.
But they all say they're getting behind the guy. You got people in the Senate. You've got the Chuck Schumer gives a press conference every week about something. John Corzine, the junior senator. He's now the senior senator from New Jersey. Yeah. There's plenty of people that could act as surrogates for John Kerry. I don't know why there aren't more.
Could end up looking smart, though. There's still months before the election happens.
Well,
We're not in the height of election season. They're pacing themselves. And Bush is doing a pretty good job.
But why are they pacing
of damaging himself? Because no one likes negative campaigns. Americans say time after time, election after election, we hate the poisonous negative
atmosphere. But support is not necessarily negative. And if these guys are holding back because they're caring more about their own careers politically than about getting on board with the Democratic message or getting behind John Kerry, it's wrong. It's a liability for the party.
It's a balance, though. I think that Bush is doing a pretty good job on not helping himself right now, and that's a cheaper way for the Democrats to run their campaign than putting out ads.
866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Adam in New Jersey. Adam.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what's up?
A couple of quick things. I after seeing Bush come out yesterday and make his statement about his conversation, I guess he's calling it, he had with the 9/11 Commission, I just think it was a PR stunt. He used the same fruitful that they used in their statement, and I don't think anything, I think they're going to come out with something that says, this is what we need to do going forward, and his administration is not going to be held to task at all for their lack of action. That's what I think about that. And the other thing I wanted to call about was how deeply disturbed I was after watching the Frontline documentary, The Jesus Factor, last night.
Oh, I didn't see it.
The one about, what, Bush's faith and how important it is.
What specifically bothered you, Adam?
Well, I am uncomfortable as it is with organized religion, but, you know, I don't care if people pray to their coffee cups in the morning.
Right.
But it just showed me the depth of how much of a born-again Christian this man is and how he is affecting policy in the Department of Health and how he's Ashcroft is a born-again Christian and how I don't want anyone in the White House who is a born-again Christian affecting policy. They're giving grants out to people, I mean, to groups that are just Christian.
And they're reconstructivist Christians. I mean, they're real fanatical. There's a contingent of them all throughout the administration. Did they go into that? I'm so mad that I missed it, and I've got a TiVo. How could I have missed it?
He makes an important point because underpinning all of this is money. Remember that the whole notion of faith-based initiatives is a way to pour huge sums of federal money, taxpayers' money, into institutions that are controlled by the church.
Yeah, but which church?
Faith-based initiative?
Yeah, absolutely is.
But is it not specifically, there's a specific type of Christianity that's practiced by a lot of these people, and I don't know if all that faith-based money is going to those.
They're beyond
evangelical.
But it doesn't all have to go to the evangelicals. The evangelicals will get their share, but some of it will go
to
the black church.
Is this like kickbacks for Christ?
Kind of. Well, you might not want to call it that, but I've been in meetings where people from the clergy have talked with politicians, and invariably the talk gets to, well, what kind of outreach are you going to do financially? Are you going to be able to allow us to compete for programs and for grants and
right.
for some of this federal money? It always comes back to that. And no, it's not just evangelicals. It's across the board.
But I think what Adam's talking about is there's these people that think in terms of theocracy, that honestly believe that the United States of America should be a theocrat, not almost like a Christian Taliban that is within, you know, the administration right now. It's kind of frightening. Jim in Chicago. Jim.
Hey, we just want to tell you, we love you out here. We can't wait to get on another station out here.
Well, thanks a lot. Right.
Mike, I'm a firefighter, and, you know, show us the money, George Bush. You talk about Homeland Security. We got fire stations that are closing down. People are getting cut back. You know, he's all talk. He's all photo ops and think the average man's with him. The firefighters love him, and that's the farthest from the truth. You know, we got a little saying. We call him Jughead because, you know, we all talk and no action, and that's how he's been his whole life.
Is that the general consensus among a lot of firefighters, Jim?
Oh, yeah. He's Bill Clinton put 100,000 cops on the street before any of this nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
The firefighter paramedics are going to be on the front line when there's the next big terrorist attack.
Right.
Which, you know, I think they want to do is talk about that to keep us all in the dark.
And you guys are feeling a little underfunded and a little without the proper attention.
There's a lot of, the average guy thinks that way. And that front line, I did watch it last night. It was really interesting. No money has gone to a Jewish or a Muslim faith-based initiative program. It's all gone to these psychopaths.
God, I feel like we've missed this historical event. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Okay.
He makes a good point. And the same thing is happening in the U.S. military, that Bush says that he'll give the troops everything that they need, whatever you want. It's just that please don't
accept.
Except that he has cut the amount of money that people get for being the extra little the bonus they get for danger pay that has gone down. So he does he tells people what he thinks they want to hear. The same went with minorities. I support black groups, I support Latino groups, and he does do all these photo ops for people, but if you actually look at the facts and the figures of what he's doing, you know, he's cutting welfare programs, he's doing so little for these communities that need money and need help. But we'll never hear about that.
866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Michael in Los Angeles, up late. Michael.
Hey, good morning.
How are you, buddy?
Good, good. I wanted to say thanks for the AA meeting.
You bet, man.
That you held there.
Thanks. I
have been through a minor recovery in my life, and I've never done the AA, but I know a little bit about it. I wanted to ask, especially as relates to Mr. Bush, how deep are you in your addiction when you start hearing those voices he seems to be hearing in his head?
Yeah, you know, those things are supposed to go away after you clean out for a little while, but
well,
I guess if you keep them in your head, you can just call him God and do whatever it tells you to do.
Usually I hear people say that it's God, but it's ordinarily just in their head.
No, absolutely. Yeah, you know, voices
can't
can
hear them when you stand next to the guy.
No, you can't. Unless they're really
loud.
But
we can hear voices in our head.
Did you have a question or something other than...
I was wondering if there was a possibility that we could organize maybe a national intervention.
Yeah.
That's called
because
the infection.
He's clearly still strung out.
Yeah, I think you're right, man.
And I think that you're right to come from a place of love. I mean, everybody that comes away from his office says he's actually a decent guy and he's a pretty nice guy and he'll slap you on the back and have a joke for you.
Yeah.
And maybe we could save him. Maybe we could... And maybe August 6th is the right day. I wonder if we can get it together that fast.
Yeah, I think the only way we could save him is maybe get him into a different line of work where he's, you know, can be a little more intimate and a little more helpful on an intimate level and get him out of the White House. Thanks a lot for your call, Michael.
Flipping burgers.
Tom, quickly. Tom.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Hey. I'd like to talk to you about the 9/11 Commission for a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
I really think it's been compromised from the start, both financially and politically. They gave more money for a commission about what? Gambling?
Right.
To find into it.
Right.
And I don't want to draw any parallels, and I'm sorry for saying this, but I think it needs to be said. When the space shuttle blew up,
yeah.
Before the debris cooled and where it landed, they had three commissions to investigate it, including one completely independent.
Republicans put $70 million into the Star Commission to investigate Clinton. Thanks for your call, Tom.
Yeah, he's absolutely right, though. There have been a number of commissions that have been much better funded than 9/11. Still to come. Bill Clinton's White House counsel weighs in on the Bush-Cheney show, and we preview a new show making its debut this weekend here on Air America. That and the all-important presidential daily briefing as Air America Radio rolls on.
His name was York. And when Lewis and Clark set out in 1804, he was a slave. William Clark's slave. But when he left so-called civilization, York became something altogether different. He became free. He became an elite hunter and explorer. He was revered by the Indians. And he was given the right to vote before most African Americans were given the right to speak. But York's bravest act came at trail's end when he demanded his freedom. Because as Lewis and Clark returned to accolades, York returned to slavery. Some say York was eventually freed. Others say he went west because what he found on the trail was a thing no man could ever give him. What can we learn from a 200-year-old story? Walk with Lewis and Clark at lewisandclark200.org and see what you discovered. Because their trail winds through us all.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio, Barbara Streisand's rushing to get today's liberal agenda done on time. Plus, Bobby Kennedy Jr. gives us a preview of his debut on Air America Radio. All that and more after this.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Reaction still abounds over the appearance of President Bush and Vice President Cheney yesterday before the 9/11 Commission. Among those evaluating the scene was veteran civil rights activist and one-time presidential candidate, the Reverend Jesse Jackson. Jackson told Air America this morning that there's something very suspect about Bush's appearance since he came armed to the three-hour meeting with his senior White House counsel, Alberto Gonzalez.
If you were in college and you were able to take your tutor and to the exam and tell your teacher the condition of the test, that would not be a true measure of your having mastered your homework. Just all a sham, really.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson, as he spoke to Air America Radio this morning. Tomorrow marks the first anniversary of President Bush's address to the American people, marking the formal end of the war in Iraq. In the backdrop during that address was a banner with the phrase, "Mission Accomplished," which has now served as political fodder for those charging the mission is far from over. Listen to West Virginia veteran Senator Robert Byrd on the Senate floor yesterday.
Mission accomplished? The mission in Iraq, as laid out by President Bush and Vice President Cheney, has failed.
Democratic Senator Robert Byrd, a broadcast company sometimes called the next Fox, has ordered its eight ABC stations not to broadcast tonight's Nightline program. Tonight's edition will air the names and photographs of more than 500 U.S. Troops killed in the Iraq War. In a statement online, the Sinclair Group said Nightline appears to be motivated by a political agenda designed to undermine the efforts of the United States in Iraq and should not be disguised as news. Sinclair executives have donated heavily to President George W. Bush. According to the Nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics, Sinclair executives have donated more than $16,000 in hard money and more than $120,000 in soft money to President Bush and his allies.
Okay then, Dr. Carter. Thanks a lot. I'll see you next time.
All right, Mr. Stewart. Now remember, keep taking your pills every day.
Mr. Stewart is one of my patients. He's got high blood pressure. So we talked about how that also puts him at risk for kidney disease. Kidney disease doesn't have any real warning signs. But if you have high blood pressure or diabetes, or a family member with kidney failure, you're at risk. So now Mr. Stewart gets simple testing done for kidney disease when he comes in. He's lucky and smart. Because if you don't get checked for kidney disease now, you could be on the waiting list for a kidney transplant later.
If you have diabetes or high blood pressure, or a family member with kidney failure, ask your doctor or healthcare professional to test you. For a free brochure, call toll-free 1-866-4-KIDNEY, because you have the power to prevent kidney disease. Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health, National Kidney Disease Education Program.
The U.S. military is said to be considering disciplinary action against the Army general charged with the responsibility of overseeing the prison in western Baghdad, where American troops were accused of abusing Iraqi prisoners. Reports say Brigadier General Janice Karpinski could be relieved of her command, blocked from promotion, or receive a letter of reprimand following an investigation into the abuse. CBS News program 60 Minutes 2 aired photographs of the victims of abuse earlier this week. It might not seem that way, but the State Department says there were fewer international terrorist attacks last year than any other year since 1969. However, the State Department's annual report doesn't include most of the violence in Iraq. The report praises Saudi Arabia's anti-terror efforts, though Congress has repeatedly been criticized by members of Congress for not doing enough. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Radical cleric Muqtada al-Sadr told worshippers at Friday's prayers that he will not accept calls to tone down his anti-American rhetoric, adding that America is the enemy.
Planet check. Clear skies, healthy forests. Don't believe the hype.
Clear skies. They use rhetoric that resonates with people, but the reality of their environmental programs is dirty air, dirty water.
That's Carol Browner, former EPA administrator under Clinton.
The current administration has been very successful in dressing up and spinning their terrible record on the environment. Environment 2004 is a group of committed environmentalists who want to make sure that voters across the country, swing voters, know exactly what the Bush administration is doing in terms of clean air, clean water, how they are failing to enforce our environmental laws.
Environment 2004's mission? Educate voters on the facts and emphasize the critical importance of this presidential election.
Please visit our website, environment2004.org.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Planet Check. Polls show that only one-third of Americans think that President Bush is doing a good job on the environment.
From Washington, D.C., that's Executive Director of Environment 2004, Amy Christensen.
The Bush administration is systematically undermining our keystone environmental protections, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Superfund laws that protect our lands.
Environment 2004 seeks to reach out to its members to learn how their local community is affected by national policy.
What's happening? happening in the next town over where a power plant no longer has to put on environmental technologies that they had to previously under the Clean Air Act. What does that mean for the quality of their air, for the impacts on their children?
Find out more by joining Environment 2004.
Membership is free. www.environment2004.org.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to tadmail.com, where environmentally conscious Americans get their internet access for free. Tadmail.com, helping people and the planet.
Some mothers and daughters bond. Others are crazy glued. And now there's a new play about mothers and daughters that'll bring you to tears of laughter from door to door. The Daily News Raves from door to door is hilarious and deeply moving. It weaves the stories of three generations of Jewish women together with great artfulness. From door to door is a funny and heartfelt play that stirs up 65 years of family secrets and surprises. From the Cossacks to Ellis Island, from overmothering to single parenting. The Journal News calls from door to door a sweet play that glows with love and timeless values. It's beautifully performed, cheers the New York Post. And the Star Ledger applauds, it's like plunging into a bowl of your grandma's chicken noodle soup. See From Door to Door by James Sherman, directed by Joe Brancato at the West Side Theater. Call telecharge.com, 212-239-6200. WOR's Joan Hamburg says, you'll enjoy it from door to door.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron here along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, don't know what to do with yourself? Well, Barbara Streisand does, and she'll tell you in today's liberal agenda. Plus, a genuine real-life Kennedy's coming on the show. Bobby Kennedy Jr. previewing his Air America debut. But right now, I've got Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley with me on Friday morning.
Hey.
Don't make it sound like an anti-climax simply because we're not Kennedys.
Hey, you know, there's only a few Kennedys around, and we get to talk to one.
Wait a minute. I thought he had like 11 kids, didn't he?
Maybe there's hundreds of Kennedys around. Maybe they're sort of like, they have enough kids. It's sort of biblical. It's a biblical family almost, the number of Kennedys there are.
Well, listen, don't say anything that's going to make him hang up before we talk to him.
No, he's going to be doing a show here. We have a lot of other shows on Air America, if you don't know that, out there in the world. I will be on Janine Garofalo's show tonight at 8 o'clock. If you didn't get enough of me now, I will be with Janine and Sam tonight at 8 o'clock for an hour hanging around. Randy Rhodes, I've been listening to myself. Very exciting.
I have, too. I've been following. I really haven't stayed up late enough, except for last night, to listen to Janine. But
yeah, I actually haven't. I've only heard bits and pieces of the show, but I listen to Sam in the morning when he's complaining about things. Sam usually gets in at around 10 o'clock to start whining. And then, so I listen to Cedar, do his whining. And that's just, I'm helping him prepare is what I'm doing. So tonight I get to see how it all pans out. And then we've got Majority Report. That's their show. And we've got the Girls After Us.
Unfiltered.
Wait a minute. It's the Girls and Chuck D.
The Girls and Chuck
Liz
D.
Wednesday.
I certainly
and
never
Rachel
called Chuck
Maddow.
D. Would never call Chuck D a girl.
Good idea.
That's Liz. A good show. But, I mean, Randy Rhodes, for some reason, man, I find her very compelling. I find her very compelling.
You know what the reason is?
Why?
She is compelling.
She's like, she knows her stuff, and she's got that momentum. It's almost hypnotic, and it makes you, when you listen to people, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to go kick some ass. She has that.
She has tenacity. Like
she
a
does.
Pit bull on your, on the inside of your ankle.
I'm just sending her some love. I read this article by this guy, Rene Gonzalez.
Yes.
That's causing so much controversy about Tillman. And I think it is, it's pretty misguided and, personal attack of a guy who died in a heroic way. But you know what?
You mean Pat Tillman, the NFL guy who went to fight for the U.S. in Afghanistan?
Yes, that's exactly who I'm talking about. And if you didn't know that, I apologize. I thought maybe you might have watched the news once in the last week. I apologize. But the article, it was weird because initially, when I read it, I was not a jock. In high school, or in junior high, or ever.
Forever.
We know that, and we don't mind.
Now, the thing is, though, as a guy who wasn't a jock, I wasn't like a geek, like our producer, Jonathan. Like, he's the kind of guy that, like, there was a trickle-down thing in high school with bullies. Like, the jocks would bully me, and then I'd bully Jonathan, and then Jonathan ends up my boss. Do you see how that works up? You see how that works? It's a trickle. It trickles down the bullying, and then the people at the bottom of the bullying list go right to the top and run the planet.
Mm-hmm.
No. And,
okay, but how does this reflect on Pat Tillman?
Well, the thing is like there's a sentiment about, you know, jocks and heroism, you know, in America that, you know, that there is something, you know, very American about sort of really putting jocks up on a pedestal. And from my experience in my life, I mean, I still have a fear to this day. I'm a 40-year-old man, you guys. And when I see a kid in a letter jacket, some part of me actually says, oh, no, be cool. What is that? How deep is that, you know, is that fear and resentment that I have towards jocks? And, like, and I could completely understand the point that this guy's making in terms of being aggravated with jocks and their place in the world, but I think he's completely misguided in being critical of Tillman and his, you know, heroic action.
You know what?
He
teed off on the wrong guy.
Right.
Pat Tillman seemed, certainly lived only for 27 years, but he seemed to live his life avoiding the spotlight wherever possible. This is a guy who turned down over $1 million a year to play for less than half that amount because he wanted to play for the team that gave him the break.
Right.
And to some extent...
So he's a loyal guy.
He was a loyal guy, but beyond that, to some extent, I believe, and this is just from what I've seen and read and heard about this guy, that he went over and fought so that guys like Rene Gonzalez could say what he said.
That's always been something I told a story on the air once about my encounter with Marine, is that they are fighting for the freedom to have the right to free speech. And this guy, he reacted quickly, and it's sort of a rant, and it's sort of vicious. But, you know, the points he makes about, you know, hero worship and about how, you know, how it's manipulated, that on either side of this argument, which is where, you know, he's, you know, not really approaching the human side of Tillman, and whereas on the other side, Tillman is a guy who said he didn't want this kind of attention if something were to happen that was awful, if he were to die, and he did, yet they still put a lot of press momentum around him. And there's a lot of people that die in this conflict, you know, of all different parts of they come from all different, you know,
oh, yeah.
you know,
but you know what hurts his argument? His brother, Pat Tillman's brother, is still serving. And you haven't heard a word out of him either.
That's right.
Well, they both agreed, of everything I read over the weekend after he was killed on Friday, was that the two brothers refused any kind of interviews. They played down
right.
their involvement
yeah.
in the war.
Right.
We're the same as everybody else. So, you know, I'm a big football player, but, you know, basically leave us alone. I mean, they've been very dignified in a way that in the current climate with everybody going on air and talking about their families and that, you know, Jessica Lynch became a big hero of the war, it's very unusual.
Yeah.
It's very unusual to, you know, play down the personalities.
Right. So that's, I mean, I think that's the point I'm trying to make, that on either side of this, you have, you know, the legitimate press, you know, parading somebody who didn't want that type of attention, is not really, you know, honoring him as a person. And this college student who criticized him, you know, posthumously in a very, you know, negative diatribe is also disregarding his humanity.
Well, now he did apologize, didn't he?
Yes,
he has said in an email to a Boston TV station that he will apologize, and that he called his article in the college newspaper insensitive. But the stuff he said was just absolutely revolting, really.
Revolting?
This was a G.I. Joe guy who got what was coming to him. I mean, it was just stupid.
It was a reaction in anger from a guy that clearly had, you know, an issue, you know, with jocks from when he was 10. You know, somebody kicked his butt in a football game, and, you know, and it just sat there and festered.
It does come across as a, you know, horribly male insecurity thing and offensive. And in the same week, I was reading something in the Wall Street Journal just yesterday, at the lack of sense of civic duty in America right now, that even people, that they're having a hard time getting people to serve on juries, and they're having to offer all sorts of medical benefits and perks and lattes and espresso machines because the regular coffee in courtrooms is not good enough. Pat Tillman was a guy who put civic duty ahead of everything else.
Civic duty, that includes, like, even, you know, paying taxes.
How dare a graduate student criticize him?
That's not true. That is not true.
In the way that he did.
That's censoring.
No,
I think that this guy...
free speech, but no, but his, the way he did it... I mean, there has to be some kind of self-censorship. Yes, he has a forum which he can say.
Yeah, so.
He can say whatever he wants to say. But I know, I'm sorry. I do draw the line at saying stuff that is just plain dumb.
Well, you draw the line, but a line can't be drawn other than that. I mean, if you think it's dumb, it's dumb. But, you know, the guy had this sort of weird, visceral, angry reaction. He made a mistake in putting it in the form that he did. But he should, by all means, have the right to do that.
This was a G.I. Joe guy who got what was coming to him. That's offensive.
Have you ever seen any of the revolutionary... Have you ever heard any of the tracks that came out of the 60s? You ever heard the type of bile and viciousness that came out of, you know, books that were written in the 60s? I mean, this isn't that unusual.
I don't do bile very well.
I'll tell you what my biggest problem with this is that he, in several instances in this piece, supposes he knows why Pat Tillman did what he did. He says Tillman, probably acting out his nationalist patriotic fantasies forged in years of exposure to Clint Eastwood and Rambo. How does he know that?
That's what I was saying before, is that he's minimizing his humanism by assuming things about the guy because of his own personal, you know, anger towards the American system.
Yeah.
He could have written a smarter column saying, you know, isn't it a shame that somebody, that this happened? And isn't it a shame that somehow in our culture we do give, you know, greater visibility to, you know, a handsome, athletic, high-profile guy who dies in the war.
As opposed to
anybody else. But that's reality.
But that would have been a different article. And I think that, you know, somehow or another he let all of his hostility get in the way of that, clearly.
Plus, I have to say, little beef of mine, it's just badly written.
Yes.
He says, of course, my friend, talking about his friend making a bet on, you know, what would happen. Of course, my friend did not want to make that bet. He'd lose. He'd have lost.
Still ahead. I think your job's tough.
I'm sorry. It's a British
We're going
family.
To talk
I told you
to a guy.
Messed up by my upbringing.
We're going
to
talk to a guy who worked as Clinton's White House lawyer. Plus, the liberal agenda's coming up. And stand at the ready, loyal liberals. And stay with us on Air America Radio.
Air America Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
Inhale deeply.
Bring the Noise with Chuck D.
What's happening, everybody? Yours truly, the Groovy Ghoulie, the Dabba Toe Tapper, Mr. Kyle Ice Jason, coming at you live and direct, just like y'all expect. You do not want to miss the next Bring the Noise show featuring Mr. Chuck D. We also have on tap Mr. Davey D. His interview with Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Also, young filmmaker Kareem Edouard here on Air America Radio.
Bring the Noise with Chuck D. Saturday night from 10 to midnight on Air America Radio.
Hallelujah. Friday morning.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Maron with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, Mornings Edition, Air America Radio. That's all the information you need. It is now 21 past the hour. It is time to reveal the top secret contents of the intelligence community's presidential daily briefing for Friday, April 30th. Today's PDB is titled Nightline to Penetrate Bubble of Serenity. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that Nightline is going to show the pictures and names of American soldiers who have died in Iraq. Aside from its questionable entertainment value and total lack of singing contestants, this poses an imminent threat to America's comfortable distance from reality. The buffer of pleasant delusion, or BPD, has been carefully maintained by the media during the conflict, but could suffer irreversible damage from Nightline's tasteless injection of real life. Worse still, this scenario indicates that our control of the media is less than total, though we're sure Michael Powell will have the situation in hand in a few months. We suggest that the president call an emergency national security press conference and then spend 40 minutes of airtime hemming, hawing, and bashing Kerry until Nightline is over. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security.
They have some help from Sinclair?
Yes, they will. Right now, it is time to join us. Joining us now to get a glimpse of what might have happened at the 9/11 panel is former White House Special Counsel to President Clinton, Lanny Davis. Good morning, Lanny. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Nice to be with you. How's it going?
Pretty well. I'm here feeding my cats while I'm talking to you.
Okay, well, good. Let's try and cover some stuff. So what do you think of Bush's reaction after the 9/11 rap session?
Well, I'm sure he is going to characterize it as is going very well. It would have been nice if he were willing to transcribe or even record what he said. I'm not sure what the secret is.
What do you think they said?
You know, I think the whole chase of trying to blame Bush versus somebody else about not anticipating 9/11 is misdirected. I'm more concerned about how Bush is going to get us out of Iraq and why we got in there in the first place and how it had nothing to do with 9/11 and that is basically the lie that needs to be corrected. The American people need to be told Iraq has nothing to do with Al-Qaeda and nothing to do with 9/11. We went in there for a completely separate reason.
So you don't think they might have hit that enough?
Well, whatever they talk about, why he didn't react to a particular memo before 9/11, I don't think anybody wins that political fight because it could be said that the Clinton administration didn't react to Al-Qaeda enough. But I think it's probably all going to come out okay for him that the commission met with him and that he answered their questions. I don't think this one's going to carry us very far as Democrats.
But you're saying the real transgression was to not really sort of, you know, get on him for, you know, putting us into a war situation that was unfounded.
Yes. The chase for blaming people about not anticipating 9/11 gets us nowhere. Sure, President Bush was slow on the reaction time when he was down at Crawford, Texas, when he was given that memo. But it's always easy to look back in time to say, how come you didn't know that memo was anticipating crashing into the World Trade Center? I think we don't get very far with this argument, but it is an important argument. We have to find out the intelligence failures that had the CIA and the FBI not talking to each other. In fact, the FBI not talking to the FBI, really, 9/11 could have been prevented had they followed the tracks of the people who were taking those aircraft training lessons, and they knew about them in June and July. I think 9/11 could have been prevented. Louis Free is a guy who's gotten off scot-free here. Where is Louis Free? That's the question. He's hiding out somewhere. He needs to be found and asked, why wasn't your FBI allowed to proceed and allowed to investigate? What were you doing in headquarters with a computer system that couldn't talk to itself?
But he did testify.
Louis Free is the ex-CIA director, ex-FBI director, right?
He testified, but Free has been given really a free pass on a lot of things. He spent most of his time when I was at the White House trying to investigate Bill Clinton for campaign finance fundraising, while right beneath his nose, Al-Qaeda was planning to come at America. And his organization was highly politicized in Washington, engaged in a lot of leaking and a lot of political stuff going on in the Hill that was anti-Bill Clinton. And he's gotten a pass, and I'm really wondering, of all people, about 9/11.
And that would be a pass of gratitude by the new Republican administration.
I think there are a lot of Republicans who give Louis Freeh a pass, and a lot of us who remember what he was up to would like to have him be held accountable for the FBI not following up on a lot of the stuff that went on here.
I don't understand, Lanny Davis. Do you have the sense that some of these problems, both within these agencies and in interagency cooperation, have actually been remedied?
No, it sounds to me from a lot of people that I know that there's still an awful lot of compartmentalization between the CIA and the FBI. And look, a lot of that was a result of concerns about domestic intelligence that came out of the 60s and the 70s. And it may have gone too far, it may have been short-sighted, and we all share the blame on that. But I still think that problem hasn't been solved. There are still egregious security issues that you have the CIA and the FBI and even the FAA at the airports not really communicating to each other. And I think there still is a whole massive problem out there. But I think they're trying to fix it. I think everybody is focused on the problem.
Lanny Davis, it seemed to me that yesterday President Bush pretty much turned this to his advantage in the comments that he made, saying, well, I thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk to these guys about how to restructure intelligence and how, you know, to prevent these things kind of happening, which is the one line that they've been sticking to on how they think that they have been successful post-9/11. Do you think that he did a good job on that?
Well, if he's allowed to simply characterize it, look, Bush is a nice guy, and he's going to come across as a nice guy. And the people in the commission walked out of that place saying he's a nice guy. And that's when he's at his best. Why didn't one reporter simply say to him, until he answered the question, why weren't you willing to be interviewed alone?
But do you think he really did come across as a nice guy? I mean, it was surprising how gushing the Democratic members of the congressional panel were in their comments about him afterwards. But was that just to show that they were not being partisan, or do you think they really were taken in and charmed by him?
George Bush is a nice guy. Full disclosure, I went to college with Bush. We were in the same fraternity. We were friends.
You were?
Yeah.
He was a cheerleader, right?
Not at Yale. He was in. He was not a cheerleader while he was at Yale.
What kind of did you drink together? Did you tap some kegs?
We did. Let me put it this way: whatever George Bush did, I did.
Okay.
Whoa.
All right. So now that you set that up, like what?
look, I consider myself a friend of President Bush. I mean, I'm one of these zealots in American history where I went to school with John Kerry, George Bush, and the Clintons.
So how is a guy now?
It was just Hillary, not Bill Clinton.
Right. As a counsel, how does somebody prepare for something like this? If you were in that meeting, would you have been able to, you know, guide him, you know, out loud?
I don't think he was ever in danger as a result of that meeting because of what I said. I don't think there's any way to blame him for not preventing 9/11. And whatever he answers, he's going to say, "Look, I just didn't see it coming." And I don't think many American people are going to blame him.
Do you think he's in charge, or do you think Cheney's in charge?
Well, that's the question that the press lets him off on. Why weren't you interviewed alone? Why weren't you interviewed on the record in public? Gerald Ford went up to Capitol Hill and publicly testified, you may remember, after he pardoned Richard Nixon. In public, I think President Bush deserved, American people deserve to have him testify in public. And if not in public, then with a transcript that we can all read. Did anyone ask him yesterday, Mr. President, what are you afraid of? Why couldn't you testify alone in public? So the press gives him a free pass on those kinds of questions. But on the question of whether he was at fault in anticipating 9/11, he wins that argument, and I think Democrats should just move on and try something else.
Thank you very much. Lanny Davis, former White House special counsel to President Clinton. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we talk to you about Pat Tillman and whatever else is on your mind, a conversation with the host of the new program, Ring of Fire. That program airs this weekend on Air America, and the all-important liberal agenda. This is Air America Radio.
And this is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Some might call it racial profiling, but the Department of Homeland Security is paying close attention to what they say is the emergence of 20 men of Middle Eastern descent who think or seek to change their surnames to Latino-sounding names in the state of Texas. The department thinks it may be linked to possible terrorist attacks on Texas oil refineries based on other supporting information. The Reverend Jesse Jackson tells Air America Radio this morning that the Bush-Cheney appearance before the 9/11 panel was a sham. Jackson contends that Bush had something to hide by blocking out the media, by banning recordings, and showing up with his White House counsel, who he described as his tutor. Israel's Ariel Sharon did not say he would step down, but he considers this weekend's Likud party referendum to be a vote of confidence. He said the failure of the referendum calling for sweeping changes in the Gaza Strip would mean an end to Likud. And Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry has given the green light for a significant convention floor appearance by noted black activist and former presidential candidate, the Reverend Al Sharpton. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Friday morning, at risk of alienating one guy who thinks I talk about music in a college radio kind of way, I love Tom Petty. Always have. Since his first record, Tom Petty's great. I'm Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. And Air America is debuting a new show tomorrow morning at 10, I'm assuming a.m., It's called Ring of Fire, and it's co-hosted by a guy named Bobby Kennedy Jr., who joins us now to tell us a little bit about it. Bobby Kennedy Jr., how are you?
Good. Hi, Mark.
Nice to talk to you.
You too.
Where are you at right now?
Mount Kisco, New York.
Oh, okay. So tell us a little bit about the show you got coming up tomorrow.
I'm doing the show with Mike Papantonio, who's who's an attorney from Pensacola and an old friend of mine, and we're focusing on the trend towards corporatism in America.
In all avenues of life, in all areas of the world and life?
That's right.
And what's the general angle that we've got to stop?
Well, the Americans have to understand the difference between free market capitalism, which democratizes a country and which is the source of one of the great sources of our greatness as a nation.
Yes.
And the corporate crony capitalism, which is as antithetical to democracy in America.
Which makes us all
Nigeria.
Which makes us all corporate bitches on some level.
Yeah, right. Let me ask you. How do you? I mean, there are people who depend on corporations for their living. Sometimes they end up getting fired from corporations. In other words, the level of corporate involvement in people's individual lives. Do you think you can get them to look at corporate America differently?
Well, it's not that the problem isn't so much the level of involvement in their lives, it's that the corporations are now running our government. And, you know, from the beginning of our colonial period, our greatest political icons of Thomas Jefferson and Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln were warning the American people that they cannot let corporations dominate our government. There's a great quote from Lincoln in 1863 in which he says, this is at the height of the Civil War, in which he says, I have the South in front of me, and I have the bankers behind me, and for my country I fear the bankers more. And, you know, communism is a control of business by government, but fascism is a control of government by business, and both of those are wrong for us. And what we want to develop in this country, what we want to nurture, is free market capitalism, where, you know, where corporations are not controlling the government or controlling the marketplace, where there's actually competition and where there's consumer choice and where there's community control and community investment. And it's not a good thing for our country when, last week it came out that only 61% of these corporations are now paying taxes. And, you know, these are entities that have no loyalty to our country. They have no they have no moral center. They're not bad intrinsically, but it is a bad thing to let their values dominate our nation and dictate our national values, because they're very, very different.
Bobby Kennedy, we're looking forward to your new show, Ring of Fire, on Air America, starting tomorrow morning at 10. Can you tell me, when was the last time you think that the U.S. government was not dominated by corporations?
Well, you know, it's always been a struggle, and there's always been corporate domination, and sometimes it's been very bad. For example, in the Gilded Age, I think it was worse when the sugar trusts and the oil trusts and the steel and railroad trusts really owned politicians and traded them almost like commodities. And corrupted our government. And Sinclair Lewis wrote his study of the American political system, called Shame of the Cities, in which he said he traced the corruption and the failures of democracy to directly towards businessmen who were running our governments, local governments and federal governments, for their own self-interest. And he said, you know, that's treason. It's a corruption of democracy, because they're not running, it becomes an oligarchy. Instead of running government for the public interest, they're running it for self-interest. And unfortunately, if you look today, we have more CEOs in the cabinet than at any time in our history. We have, you know, in my area, which is the environment, we have a mining industry lobbyist running public lands. We have a timber industry lobbyist running the Forest Service. The second in command at EPA is a Monsanto lobbyist. The second most powerful guy in the government, Andrew Card, is a General Motors lobbyist. And if you look at all of the secretariat, the undersecretariats, the assistant secretariats, the deputy secretaries and deputy undersecretaries in virtually all of the major departments that have any kind of environmental relevance, Department of Energy, Department of Agriculture, Department of Interior, EPA, and so on, they are all, literally all of them, run by lobbyists from the industries they're supposed to regulate. These people are not put in there to behave in the public interest. They are put in there to serve the corporate interests of these, you know, giant corporate contributors. And their behavior is very, very predictable. And we've seen it, you know, great costs imposed on the American people over the last 3 years, because of that.
So, Bobby Kennedy Jr., what kind of stuff are you going to be doing on your show?
Mike and I are going to try to do very, very substantive shows. The first one's going to be on the Mercury deal, the deal that the Bush administration made after receiving $48 million from the coal-burning utilities and the coal companies, that they threw out a mercury regulation that would have forced the utilities to remove mercury within 3.5 years.
So you're going to have a lot of investigative stuff.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Bobby Kennedy Jr. The new show is called Ring of Fire. It is debuting tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Thank you so much for having me on, Mark.
You bet. Take care, man.
Good luck.
Still ahead, we've got the liberal agenda. Plus, we're taking your calls about anything, about Pat Tillman made into a hero because he was a football player, or anything else that's on your mind. We're at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270, right here on Air America Radio.
In the 1980s, video cassette recorders revolutionized home entertainment by letting us watch what we want, when we want. But who ultimately decides what we're allowed to watch?
It is our holy mission to protect our community from certain undesirable elements.
I'm Darlene Liebling, and as a network television executive, I deal with censorship issues every day. I'm producing an independent film called Heart of the Beholder, based on the true story of how a young couple lost everything because they dared to stand up to a group of religious fanatics and a corrupt prosecutor. Our website is beholder.com. Unlike Mel Gibson, we don't have millions of dollars. Our film is financed by grassroots supporters and the equity in my home. If you're passionate about protecting our personal liberties, visit us at beholder.com. We also need help contacting star talent who aren't afraid of the religious right. Heart of the Beholder, the movie Hollywood is afraid to make.
Unfiltered.
When the Dalai Lama passed through the United States, he went to Minnesota. And so the governor, Jesse Ventura, had to meet the Dalai Lama. And the question he asked the Dalai Lama, have you ever seen the movie Caddyshack? That's what he asked him.
Liz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
So,
I'm not even going to ask what the answer was, although you know I'm dying.
Reconsider your third-party candidates, people.
Air America's Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon on Air America Radio.
Friday morning, Air America Radio, Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron with Sue Elcott and Mark Riley.
I'm buying the song.
I can change. Really, I can, honest, I can.
It's a good album. We're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We were talking about Rene Gonzalez's sort of, insensitive attack on Pat Tillman personally. Which he apologized for in an article he wrote at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in a op-ed piece for the paper there. But in the article, he says, I'm paraphrasing, the dreamy American thought process is that forces Americans to put sports greats and larger-than-life sacrificial lambs on the pedestal of heroism, no matter what they've done. After all, the American nation has no other role to play but to be the cheerleaders of the home team, a sad role to have to play during conflicts that suffer from severe legitimacy and credibility problems. And I quote, he shouldn't be held as a hero. He should be used as a poster boy for the dangerous consequences of too much America is number one frat boy propaganda bull.
I'm only guessing, because so, this guy is not a graduate of the writing program, is he?
So outside of, his personal attacks, which were, heinous and misdirected, he is, positing an idea about the nature of American culture and what is heroics and how is it used. Is it equally as insensitive on a human level to parade Tillman, even when he said he didn't want to be paraded, and to use his image to extol the war? Or is that as insensitive as, what Gonzalez did in his personal attack at Tillman? We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. We're going to Rob. Rob, are you there?
Yep.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
I'm good.
I want to say one thing before I start. The show is awesome.
Thank you.
Because somebody to listen to. I'm younger, and the other political radio I can't put up with.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling.
With the Tillman story. Basically, my idea on it is, I think what they're saying about him is terrible, and I think the fight back really is, how many of these guys gave up a lot that really wanted to fight for their country, that had successful careers and other things like that, that were motivated by false propaganda by the Bush administration?
Right.
About things, especially in Iraq. He wasn't in Iraq. He was in Afghanistan, which is, he was fighting terrorism, yes.
Now, he was in Iraq before he went to Afghanistan, though. We ought to note that he did both. He didn't just do one.
It's very well, and I think that's really the story that needs to be ran on it, too. I mean, he probably enlisted due to fake propaganda by the Bush administration that he was really fighting something that's real, that no one, especially the right-wing conservatives, can prove with any facts of Iraq with links to terrorism.
So you're saying he died for a war that didn't have any real foundation.
That's what I truly believe.
Thanks for calling, Matt. Thank you.
Except that he died in Afghanistan, and the war against terrorism is not about
fighting against states. It's not the same as Iraq.
It's about terrorist cells that have spread throughout the world, and why it's so difficult to actually fight against. It's because it's sort of metastasized into all of these stateless groups.
Well, that's
the
point.
He was in Afghanistan doing something. If he had died in Iraq, then we could maybe make the point that he did.
Right, exactly. Matt in Milwaukee, Matt.
Good morning, Mark and company. How are you?
Pretty good,
man. You know, I'm kind of divided on this whole Tillman thing. You know, any person that goes to war on behalf of our country obviously is putting themselves in harm's way, and either at their own choice or maybe they're being directed to go.
Right.
Having a friend who was in the National Guard and then sent over there and being told 4 weeks before he was supposed to be sent home that he was going to be given a crash course in minesweeping when he's an engineer
right. Concerns
me. You know, I think the focus with this whole Pat Tillman story that we're missing is that Pat Tillman sacrificed lots of money, went to fight for our country, and we're talking about this now 2 weeks after he was killed in action.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, 2 days ago, 8 of those 10 American soldiers that were killed in that south of Baghdad were supposed to be going home, and they had their stay extended.
Right. What we were talking about here is that, you know, is so much attention is put on this guy because he fits a certain role for the American culture, and a lot of the people that are dying every day are not really paid attention to.
And I do applaud him saying, I'm willing to, you know, go fight for my country, and something he believed in. You should fight for what you believe in, which mm-hmm. is part of the reason why I'm such a proud liberal Democrat who fights hard against the right-wing conservative mm-hmm. People in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have the highest death toll of any month in this war occurring this month, and the continued denial of the Bush administration and anybody else on the right that they made a mistake. No one wants to admit a mistake, and this young man was caught up in that mistake, and other young men and women are being caught up in the same thing as well.
Thank you very much for your call,
Thank
Matt.
You.
Again, we should specify that Pat Tillman did die in Afghanistan during a different sort of part of the conflict, but it's interesting to hear what people are saying on either side of that. Here we got Bill in Wisconsin. Bill.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Okay, man.
Thank God for the Internet so I can listen to you guys.
Oh, man, thanks.
I guess I was an Army Ranger myself,
mm-hmm.
and I always felt uneasy after the announcement came out that Pat Tillman was killed in Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
Just all the attention
right.
that was heaped upon him and his career and his path leading up to that, because it was exactly what he didn't want and what, you know, exactly what no person in the military wants, you know, just all this extra attention.
They're sort of using him posthumously.
Right. You know, that he's special, but the guys that around him who have died aren't.
So in a way, that the way the media and the culture is responding to this is exactly what Pat Tillman requested not to happen, and they, not unlike the guy who wrote the piece for the Amherst paper, are dehumanizing him in an effort to get their own sort of ideas across.
Oh, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. There's a Rick Riley, who's a columnist for Sports Illustrated, he's always on, like, the back page, wrote an excellent column in this week's Sports Illustrated that kind of paralleled Tillman with his other gentleman named Todd Bates,
mm-hmm.
20 years old, from Ohio, and he was killed. Most people don't even know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And Riley paralleled the two people. You know, one guy that, you know, was his big football hero and tried to be nobody, you know, just, you mm-hmm. know, doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another guy who joined the military so he can go to college and maybe play football.
And that's in the newest Sports Illustrated?
That's in the new one.
Oh, wow,
this
man.
This week. It's really, really excellent. And it gave me some peace of mind.
Oh, great. Well, I'm going to take a look at that. Thanks for calling us, Bill.
Yeah, no problem.
Appreciate it. Joe in Manhattan. Joe.
Well, I've been hearing about this article all morning on other stations, and I would like just to say that, remember, this is a war, this is a euphemistic war. I mean, the term even war and terror is, you know, terrorism is usually, or as far as I know from the military, anyone in the military should know this, is a tactic of war. And therefore, you know, you're having a war on a war, on a tactic of war. I mean, the euphemisms, the doublespeak, it's all a bunch of empty lies. If you go into the service, and you're believing what they feed you and what you hear and the propaganda, then you are just living a fantasy. You're not really living in reality.
All right, thanks for your call, man. I understand what you're saying. You know, it's weird that he says that about the war on terror. Even Bremer, the guy who's in charge of things in Iraq. L. Paul Bremer said in a speech, I got to get the date. This was a couple, was it a year or so ago?
It was 6 months before 9/11, I believe.
He said, if you call it a war, he suggests there's a victory. I would argue there is no final victory in the war against terrorism any more than there is in the so-called war against crime.
Oh, that one may have been after. But I know he said some stuff before 9/11 that was kind of critical of the Bush administration's zeal in combating terror.
Right. Brian in Maybrook. Brian?
Thanks.
Hey.
Good morning, all. I like to say that, first of all, the last caller, I don't know what he's talking about. Why is he listening to any other station?
Exactly. I'm glad you said it.
But I did spend a lot of time over the last few years listening to a syndicated sports talk host with Jim Rome, who was all over the Pat Tillman story from the day that he enlisted. And I would like to point out that Tillman is extraordinary in that he achieved a place of privilege and willingly gave it up to do what he believed was right. Now, whether or not we agree that what he did was right does not diminish the sacrifice that he made. And
right.
that's what really resonates with the public in terms of his own personal story.
Uh-huh.
I personally believe that what we need to do as people who believe that what's going on in Iraq is wrong and problematic is to carefully point out the illogic of extending Tillman's self-sacrifice with legitimacy of the activities in Iraq. And it's a very difficult argument to make, especially with people who are unwilling to extend a lot of critical thinking to what's going on with their leadership right now.
That's a very thoughtful response. Thank you for calling. So he's saying that there are separations that need to be made, you know, in terms of how we assess the conflict and how we assess, you know, Tillman's personal story and how we assess how the culture, you know, responds to it. And I think he's right. And again, you know, Tillman did die in Afghanistan. It's a different conflict than the Iraqi conflict. But how he was used posthumously, you know, for both sides, you know, being the critical side, which is represented by this, you know, poorly written piece by Rene Gonzalez, though a passionate piece, and also all the other reaction to it, which is, you know, the heroism and sort of pedestaling him over other people that have died.
I want to say you might add a third group onto that, and that is the Army. They have given Pat Tillman a posthumous promotion.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
To
so
what?
You know, I'm afraid that I don't know. But he was a specialist. He went in as an Army specialist, didn't he? So now he's...
So they're assuming that, you know, maybe if he shows up wherever he's going to be... I don't know what that means, posthumous promotion.
Well, it's like giving someone a posthumous medal. It's just a recognition.
Oh, okay.
It's a recognition for his achievements and his contribution to the U.S. military after he has died. But, you know, so... they see him as a hero, or the Army wants to see him as a hero, and I think he's a genuine hero. I think that he is a very much an all-American success story.
I don't think anyone's arguing with that. I think we're talking, you know, in terms of, you know, how he's being handled in the press and how he's being handled in the media and culturally and these different reactions to a person who has died and is being, you know, somewhat dehumanized on both sides.
So he was promoted to corporal? I thought he was a specialist. I thought he was above corporal rank.
I don't know. We don't have
the corporal.
We don't have the information.
I'm rather weak on the rankings of the U.S. military.
Uh-huh.
I can get up to speed. I will Google him while Mark goes on to the next thing.
we don't have much time. You're going to have to bring that back on Monday. You know, that information.
See how
you
quick
Google
I
it.
Am? He was promoted to corporal.
He was promoted to corporal. All right.
Wow.
You know, he was. I really think that there is an element of heroism in the way he approached his own life, beyond the service, beyond the football playing. This was a guy who, and when you look at the NFL and you look at how self-aggrandizing so many players are, guys,
all they care about is money,
pom-poms,
right.
and Sharpies, and all of this kind of stuff. And to see this out of an NFL ball player, I think it was extraordinary.
Noble person. There's the facts from the Streisand compound with our daily marching orders. This is your liberal agenda for today. Get your notebooks out and your pencils or pens or write it on your computer. One, pick up stuff to roast on the grill this weekend. Range-fed chicken, soy burgers, and American flags. Two, travel across the country forcing people at gunpoint to watch Will and Grace. Three, make whining constitutionally protected free speech. Four, announce mission accomplished to any project that has gone terribly wrong. Five, do whatever it takes to make the Boy Scouts even gayer. Yes, there you go. That's going to get us a little mail. That's the liberal agenda for today, Friday, the 29th of April. It's been a great show. Had a good time. Hope to see you guys on Monday.
On Monday, yes. Have a good time on the flight.
Yeah.
Time
have a good
Monday.
Time with your kids.
Racking up the frequent flyer miles.
Have a good time on a Stairmaster, Riley.
Well, if that's what I end up on. I have no idea.
Let us know what it's like lying back on that couch watching your daughter grow.
Okay. And watching some TV.
That's right. Watching plenty of TV. NBA is still on.
And who's your favorite? Jerry Springer's not on the weekend.
No, he's not on the weekend. No. But maybe I might even catch a little soccer, a little English football action.
All right, well, have a good weekend.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, Ring of Fire. An interesting name for a show.
That's Johnny Cash song.
Johnny Cash song, absolutely. That airs tomorrow morning right after the Best of Morning Sedition. Starts at 10 o'clock Eastern Time, Saturday morning. Join us Monday on Air America Radio when we'll talk to a man who's out of this world, or will be anyway, when he pays millions of dollars to go into space. That's Monday's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
Your lawn is being taken over by dandelions and crabgrass.
Help!
With Weed Be Gone, one product gets rid of the dandelions.
But not the crabgrass.
The other kills the crabgrass.
But not the lawn weeds. There's gotta be a better way.
There is. Bayer Advanced All-in-One Weed Killer. It kills lawn weeds plus crabgrass in just one easy step, and it won't harm your lawn.
Two kinds of weeds, one simple solution.
Bayer Advanced. Better thinking, better results. Available at Lowe's and other garden retailers.
Maybe you can drive my car, and maybe I love you.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm Nick Cannon.
We're rad.
What's up? I'm Beyonce.
Hey, I'm Kelly.
Hello, I'm Michelle.
And we're Destiny's Child.
What's up, y'all? It's Eve.
Hey, this is Meredith Edwards for Rad, and I'm here to remind you that friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council. Yeah!
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
Hey, this is Rachel from Unfiltered on Air America Radio, where we promise you news and opinions you will not hear anywhere else, including on the rest of the network. It's unfiltered at airamericaradio.com. That's our email address. We always love to hear from you. I'll be back in just a second with Chuck D and Liz.